On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome back to reality. By now, even the turkey carcass soup should have been consumed. Hope you all had a very nice Thanksgiving. Hope you all gave some consideration to the other side of the Thanksgiving debate. Because there are people on this continent, many of them, who justifiably so mark Thanksgiving as a day of grief, of fasting, and of remembrance of a civilization, civilizations erased, blotted out, rubbed out, wiped out by Europeans. Certainly passes my mind. But it has been a long weekend. It has been, in a way, when stories break and I'm away from the microphone, I'll tell you, I was this close. Damn, if only we were doing video. I was this close to just coming in here and cranking stuff up and doing a show regardless of whether anybody was listening. Because, by God, what was going on Thursday and Friday, Saturday, Sunday, was eating my guts. And I got to figure it was doing something similar to yours. Mumbai, the massacre there, the repercussions, the right-wing emails that are blasting out all over creation now saying, New York preparing for Mumbai-style attacks.
Huh.
And frankly, I was a little bit suspicious of the source of the Mumbai attacks. Now, there sits Mumbai on the Arabian Sea, just, you know, a straight shot across from where the Somali pirates are hanging out. The group calls itself the Deccan Mujahideen. The Deccan, referring, of course, to the Deccan Plateau, basically the southern plateau of the point of the Indian subcontinent. One of the most geologically stable regions in the world, by the way. Learned that geeking up, reading about the Deccan Plateau. And yet, it's Pakistan. You know, when all your problems look like nails, all your solutions will look like hammers. There's no better. So now there's a tremendous tension. Pakistan saying, "Oh, we didn't do it." Never mind the fact that Pakistan, who of course, up until fairly recently, was under the sway of a brutal dictator who killed his own people. Wait, where have I heard that before? Can't control its own frontier areas, so frankly, they have no idea whether these people came out of Pakistan. But the Deccan Mujahideen indicates that it was an internal group that carried out these attacks in Mumbai. Or Bombay, depending on which you prefer. I read somewhere that many residents of that city still call it Bombay and not Mumbai. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So there was, hell on earth opened in India beginning Wednesday evening as we went on the air with the story. And, you know, for only 20 or 30 so-called terrorists, I mean, what else do you call them? I don't know. But it seems that word has been worked beyond its usefulness. They held off the biggest part of the Indian military. And it was just amazing. The Taj Hotel, the Oberoi, a couple of cafes, and the, of course, Jewish Center. Just sickening. Sickening. Told to target Westerners, we are informed. And yet at the same time, the vast majority of the deaths were, of course, citizens of India. What does that say? I'm sorry. What does it solve? What does it accomplish? What does it get? Because, after all, terrorism is the attempt to affect policy or governmental accessions via horrific violence against non-combatants. What did it accomplish? I suppose somewhere there's some religious loony saying, "Oh well, you know, they're off with their 72 Virginians." But I don't think most people think that way. I think it's a safe bet that most people don't think that way. So there was that. And that was the order of the day getting through Thanksgiving Day. And then came Friday. Friday, when the demonic god of money and thing worship rose up in its bloody and beastly glory, possessed a crowd of 2,000 outside of Walmart, and led to the sad, stomping death of a 34-year-old young man who was a temp agency worker at, of course, Walmart. Walmart, where we say, "Merry Christmas!" If there was any justice in this country, someone in the state of New York, preferably a local prosecutor or perhaps an attorney general, would be looking at criminal charges against the Walmart CEO, CFO, COO, director of marketing, vice president of marketing and advertising, all the way down to the store chain or the store manager there in Valley Stream, New York. Instead, I'm seeing mumblings in the news about, "Well, you know, we might try to find the people who trampled him, but there was 2,000 of them, and I don't know how many of them we'd find. And it's hard to tell which exact footprint did him in." No, 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 no. Wrong! Wrong, 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 wrong! The crime is riot, and the condition precedent to crime is incitement to riot. Now, see, in the last 8 years, if you showed up with a sign that said maybe Bush is a war criminal or no blood for oil or the wrong T-shirt on, you got charged with obstructing justice, inciting a riot, all kinds of stuff. Case after case after case after case after case of people who weren't inciting riots but merely exercising their First Amendment rights to political protest being charged and hauled away as a function of the criminal process. Lord, the Reverend Jim Wallace got arrested for sitting peaceably outside the White House a couple of times. Several others did, too. And yet Walmart can, you know, maybe, because, you see, it was all deliberate, wasn't it? Every last thing that happened in Valley Stream, New York, that led to the death of that poor young immigrant man was a deliberate act. from the sign that was stuck up on the wall on poster board and hand lettered that said, Blitz line starts here. Blitz line? From that to the fact that there was minimal crowd control at the very most, to the fact that Walmart not only puts the information out, but is proud and advertises the daylights out of the fact that they're going to have, you know, a little handful of really ridiculous bargains. And you can only get there if you line up in the freezing cold in the middle of the night and are willing to battle your way to the product. 10, 20, 50 big screen TVs? There were 2,000 people there. This was a deliberate act. This was a consumerism Eucharist. There we go. Ooh, that's a mouthful of words. But that's what it was. It was a consumerism Eucharist. It was a human sacrifice on the altar of Walmart's incessant drive for holy profit. P-R-O-F-I-T, holy profit. And the acolytes were whipped into a frenzy. Somewhere along the way, I thought of that line from Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. Far away, across the fields, the tolling of the iron bell calls the faithful to their knees to hear the softly spoken magic spell. And what was that not-so-softly spoken magic spell? Low prices, always! And they're even lower today. If you show up between 5 a.m. and 11 a.m., you can have it all! We can make you happy! We've got stuff! And a 34-year-old man who was beloved by his community, whose mother had to fly back to Queens from Haiti to bury her stomped son, was the sacrifice. In case you were wondering, yes, Wally World did issue a statement. Their press release on this said, and I quote, "We expected a large crowd this morning and added additional internal security, additional third-party security, additional store associates, and we worked closely with the Nassau County Police. We also erected barricades. Despite all of our precautions, this unfortunate event occurred. I love the smell of money. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the family of the deceased. We are continuing to work closely with local law enforcement, and we are reaching out to those involved. Open me another pint of O positive." Those are the words of Hank Mullaney, Senior Vice President and President, Northeast Division of Walmart, U.S. "Our thoughts and prayers go out to the family." Yeah, thoughts and prayers, but no check, baby! Ain't gonna be no check! Don't sue us because we are immune from lawsuit. And don't you dare, we're working with law enforcement. That's called crime scene contamination. Oh, sure, there was a mob, and they were a mob, and it was a riot. But riots don't happen by themselves. Riots are, generally speaking, incited. That's why incitement to riot is a crime. That is why, under the doctrine of First Amendment law in this nation, as the old saying goes, you cannot yell fire in a crowded theater. because it creates such mass pandemonium that even if there is a fire, the pandemonium itself will probably kill more people than the fire would. Easy enough to understand. Well, you see, the CEO of Walmart and the vice president of marketing and advertising are the ones who yelled, fire! In the wee early pre-dawn hours of Friday, Black Friday, November the 28th, 2008. They yelled fire from one end of this country to the other. And it was utterly foreseeable, it was entirely reasonable to imagine that whipping up crowds like that somewhere along the way would result in human misery and human death. Don't worry, though. There will not be justice for the young man killed. Because really, under workers' comp law, Walmart is immune from suit. Now, they say he was a temp worker, and the question is, was he a temp worker hired by Walmart? No, he was a temp worker hired by an outside agency. So Walmart can even deny the workers' comp claim and say, hey, that's the employment agency's problem, not ours. Walmart walks. Unless somewhere devoted district attorney, prosecutor, or attorney general takes seriously his or her oath and brings the Walmart outlaws to justice. It is that simple. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Darn it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert, how are you?
Hey, you know, I'm doing well. I couldn't agree more with how you've outlined it. I love the new voice. That's wonderful. The vampire, rich vampires. That's just... That's awesome. Anyway, as the great and glorious Reverend Billy has laid out, I didn't do any shopping at all on that day. And when I heard that, that was the first thing I thought. I'm like, well, Walmart can sit here and give away plasma TV, you know, 70-inch plasma TV for $50, but I can't go in a theater and yell fire. I mean, you know...
That is yelling fire.
Exactly, it is.
The television, and that was one of the principal things offered, Albert. What was it, a 50-inch the plasma television for something ridiculously stupid, like $750?
Yeah.
And that's fire, the television is the American altar. In ancient Rome, they had a little shelf where they put their household gods. What were they called? The Lares, I think. And that was a little household shrine. Well, the household shrine now hangs on the wall and is up to 50 inches the diagonal.
Yeah, bigger than that, but yeah.
This was a religious frenzy no less than the religious frenzies that are whipped up during the Hajj in Mecca. You know, because every other year or so we find 32 people were stomped to death today trying to get to the big black rock in Mecca. This is that, Albert.
That's my neighborhood, you know. I mean that's kind of where I grew up. And you know, when I went back there, there are so many people, and one of the things about living out in the country is you'll hear about country folk and rural folk always talking about, you know, I don't like big crowds. And, you know, I kind of grew up, and when you'd hear stuff like that, you'd never really understand why, because, you know, when you grow up in a crowd, it's easy to move around in a crowd. You know, I mean, I used to pride myself in being able to cut through a crowd. And
same here.
At the same time, Yeah. I mean, but at the same, I'm still good at it. But I mean, at the same time, when you have,
it's a little different with little ones in tow.
It is, but when you have hundreds of people out there since 3 o'clock in the morning, all like with their, you know, fat, greasy faces plastered up against the glass waiting for, you know, the poor sap from Haiti. You know, that's the guy who opened the door. I'm sure that's the guy that got it first. And these people just run. They don't care. I mean, man, they run over their own mother.
But you've also got to remember, because, I mean, you know crowds. I know crowds. You know, crowds, generally, it's not necessarily the people at the front that are causing the problems.
No, it's everybody.
It's the people at the back who can't see, don't know. They're the ones most in the dark. They're the ones who don't know what's happening. You know, all of this could have been prevented. You walk into Wendy's and they got that little thing, or Burger King, and you walk in and you walk down one side and you walk back the other way and you walk back the other way, and then you wind up at the cashier.
Yeah, the Disneyland.
The cordons or whatever. And you go to one of those, probably would have saved that guy's life. What's that cost? $1,000?
Heck. You know what? Get one of them butcher tape number tag thingies. You know, boom, first come, first serve. Boom, 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 boom.
And when there's no more numbers, everybody has to leave.
Or you know, you go to the back of the line, and, you know, the first 100 are the first ones to get in. If you don't, oh, too bad for you. I mean, what do they want? They want the thousands of people running through the stores?
Because they get free advertising and free publicity out of it. Walmart is a very meticulous and very deliberate organization, and they don't do anything, Albert, without having fully calculated the consequences of it.
Well, I'm sure. Well, their lawyers have taught them well.
Well, yeah, sure, but just like when Ford got sued for the exploding Pinto back in the 70s, you know, they through the process of discovery in a civil suit, they found the memos that said, well, you know, we expect X number of Pintos will explode, but it's cheaper for us to make the exploding Pintos and pay the damages later than it is for us to modify the Pintos on the line.
Mm-hmm.
It's called cost-benefit analysis. And I will wager that somewhere, because those risk management goonies at Walmart are good. Somewhere along the way, if you were able to dig through in Bentonville, you'd find the memo that said, well, you know, we may get one person crushed, but the amount of sales we're going to have on this one day will far outweigh anything we could ever have to pay in the way of damages for one dead human being.
But that's not what happened. Is it? That's not what happened at all. Yeah, people went there to get the super cheap crap.
You know, but this isn't. I'm also reminded by email from our buddy Marty that, you know, this isn't an isolated incident. You know, there was a death in Valley Stream. There was a shooting at a California Toys R Us. But, you know, there was the mad rush for PlayStation 3 that Marty points out. This, you know, Cabbage Patch Kids, it's been going on for years. These are deliberate acts. These are intentional acts. There is what the lawyers call mens rea involved with all of this. There is criminal intent. And if it was you or I doing it, Albert, our asses would be in jail right now.
Yep.
Where do you reckon the CEO of Walmart is? Vail? Killington, Staad.
probably some hotel room that costs as much as you and I make a year combined. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, per day that is. I mean, you know.
I'm sorry. I hate these bastards. I can't stand to walk into the place.
Yeah.
It's frustrating because there are a couple of things that. Dadgummit, the local Kroger's hasn't started carrying yet, despite my begging. You know, and it's funny because I go to these guys at Kroger's and they're really nice people and I say, please, please, won't you get something like this in? Please. Because in one case, it's something as prosaic as 100% Colombian decaffeinated coffee. Kroger's doesn't have it. Wally World does. Now, we've talked about moral choices and ethical choices. Do I have to give up is that another? I'm running out of vices, Albert.
Nope, here, this is where you go. Here, write this down. Justcoffee.coop. COO.
Well, no, I know I can do this stuff online, but.
Do it. Do it.
But for reasons that don't bear going into, I can't do this stuff online.
Yeah. I'll do it for you.
But you know, fair trade stuff, I love all that. But
that coffee co-op is that's a good one. I don't know the advertising, but I believe.
Tell me again, Just Coffee.
JustCoffee.coop. They have the most they have the coffee. If anybody
that's .coop. I didn't know we had that extension.
Yep. Yes, we do.
I'll be darned. Yeah, because I mean, I love the stuff that that they sell there at SuperBeans.com. Great folks.
That's also excellent, and it is of that caliber. It may be just a I haven't had as many as in terms of the Super Beans, but it may be a tiny bit better. I'm not entirely sure how he roasts it, but the way that these guys roast it at
Bob Alexander at Super Beans has a particular niche trade in Hawaiian coffees, and holy smoke! I mean, it's almost like you can taste wine in the coffee. It's that beautiful.
That's how good coffee should be. Good coffee should be like that, and you should get your, maybe we'll have to send you a care package with a French press in it.
Oh, let's not go into coffee porn this early. I didn't mean to get off on this tangent, but the fact of the matter is, I loathe walking into Wally World. I can't stand it. Everybody, and you know, once in a, every now and then, I walk in just to have a trip around and see if anything's changed. The workers there are glum. The people going through there, the people shopping there are like robots.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a completely different experience if you go somewhere else. You know, compare that. Now, we don't have one around here, but I've been in them. Compare going to a Sam's Club to going to a Costco. Completely different experience at Costco.
Yeah, cool. The Costco workers are happy for the moment.
Yeah, for the moment.
Maybe not forever, but... yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, not for nothing, people stop shopping. If you don't need it, don't go get it. I mean, I gotta just say, like, I do think that this whole consumerism, you know, sure, there'll always be herds, and, you know, we still have herds of buffalo, but that's where these guys, we still have dinosaurs.
But the thing is, the herds ordinarily, herd behavior is not in itself problematic. It is what happens when somebody fires a gun behind the herd.
Mm-hmm. Stampede.
Stampedes the herd. That's where the problem comes from. Email question rolling in from Gail. She says, why was a temp hired to do maintenance being made to do a security job? I'd be willing to bet Walmart would have had to pay a security guard more and give them training. Well, yeah, but this guy was a temp, and he was 6'4".
Hey, you're a big guy. Come here.
Yeah, go unlock the doors.
Yeah, jeez.
And you know the guy had lost his job as some sort of customer service rep, and this was some sort of stopgap to get him through the season. But you know we talk about it in terms of Walmart, Albert. But it isn't really, to be fair, it's not just Walmart. This is something that is done all over the United States by various and sundry stores. Walmart just happens to do it more mercilessly, more rapaciously, more bloodthirstily than anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, there were other stories from Friday coming out about a guy trying to take a product out of a woman's arms literally in the cash register line. And I remember, literally, funny little story from years back. We were on a family outing. We were going to the movie theater, which necessitated going to Charleston. And one of our daughters split the seat in her pants. And the closest thing to the movie theater, you know, daughters being daughters, you know, I can't go with my, you know, my pants, I've got a rip, and they'll see, and I don't want to, and Daddy.
Yeah, you're laughing at me.
And so the nearest thing was damnable Wally World, and it was the Christmas season. And, I'm in little girl's clothing, and I'm completely baffled, and Agnes had sent me in and said, get this size, and just find a pair of sweats. So I did. And I had a woman come and yank the pants out of my hands. Oh, yeah, hell yeah. But I'm a guy, so I, you know, if it had been another guy doing it, I would have, you know, I would have clocked him. But you can't go punching the hateful ladies in Walmart.
What?
Yeah, oh, yeah. You know, well, you know, they got those little, you know, they got those little clips on the hangers that clip onto the clothing. Well, I'm holding the hanger looking at it, and she grabs the pants and pops the clips, and away she goes. This is America.
For some sweatpants. Oh, my goodness gracious.
No, but they were $5 sweatpants that had been marked down from $25. This is America, Albert. This is the nation we have created. Not you, not me. But Madison Avenue, vice presidents of marketing and advertising. You know, I played that clip from Bill Hicks on Wednesday evening.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody in the crowd here in marketing or advertising? Kill yourself. No joke, not a bit, just planting seeds. Kill yourself. And, yeah, this is not a boating accident. This is the America that has been created and foisted onto us. Starting, oh, long about after the Second World War. The consumer culture. And I'm sick of it, Albert. I'm sick of it.
I'm sick of it, too. It's gone, but it's over, Bob. It's not going to be our future. It can't be. It just cannot. It's not environmentally sustainable, economically sustainable, consciously sustainable. It's not sustainable in any way, shape, or form to have what we have at this moment. We cannot sustain this. We cannot. I mean, what, you know, these stampedes. That's just a symptom. That's not the problem. You know, I mean, obviously, people will try to band-aid it and say, all right, no more stampeding. When there's 15 billion different ways to do something better. The thing is the whole entire system, which people want to put band-aids and put tape around. That's the problem. That's the thing that there's this whole thing that people would. I mean. Rip something out of someone else's hand. What causes people to be as rude as that is completely beyond me. I mean, it's like, I don't know. I guess I live by rules and, you know, a certain level of civility. But, you know, when we sit here and look, you and I are the first ones to say, well, no, you know, Buy Nothing Day. That sounds like a holiday I could partake in.
And you know what? We did. Friday.
Me too.
Didn't leave the house. Didn't buy nothing. It wasn't a challenge, and I didn't. And none of us felt bereft. I made more pies because our chat room moderator Lottie has a sweet potato pie recipe that's up on the website. Oh my God, it's fabulous! And I made them for Thanksgiving dinner, and the bottoms of the pans were shiny when they were gone. And so I had to do two more on Friday. And that's what I did. And I watched my beloved Mountaineers choke. And it was just pleasant. It was fun to be home. It was nice. Except for all of this stuff. Juanita in Florida just emailed me another story, Albert. Get this. An armed man dressed as an old woman fired two shots inside a Walmart during an attempted robbery Sunday, sending dozens of panicked shoppers scrambling at the South Kirkman Road store. This is from the Orlando Sentinel. No one was hurt, and the shooter, who was dressed in a white floral dress, short gray wig, and black floral jacket, took off in a stolen car. That no one was hurt is, although I hate to use the word, a miracle. This is our America.
Oh.
Anybody want to stand up and sing? Anybody want to stand up and sing or do the pledge or anything? And you know, there's a thing underneath this, Albert. If you can sell a 50-inch plasma television for $750 or $800, what's the real cost of that thing? Because Walmart doesn't do anything that loses money.
True.
Because if they've got 10 of those for $800, well, sir, that one's gone. But I tell you what, Now we got another 50 inch from another brand, and you know it's only $1,000. That's just $200 more. Or look here. Now this one ain't 50, but this here is a 42 inch LCD, and it ain't got that plasma in it. You know when that stuff falls on your carpet, it's just a mess. It's LCD, and it's 42 inches. That's just 8 inches less, but it's $800 too. And that's a damn good price. You see what I'm asking?
Well, no, I hear you. I'm with you. And you know,
this is fraud. This is fraud.
Well,
consumer fraud.
Talk about how technology certainly is advancing. This does, and it is. It is. I mean, that's essentially why they hold back technology. I know it's a little bit of a tangent what I'm about to say, but like the next stage in TVs will be OLEDs. Well, OLEDs right now are very expensive, but once they start manufacturing them, they cost almost virtually nothing to make. So we're going to see. I mean, essentially, if they don't market these things correctly, like we're not going to, like, Bob, in 10 years, an OLED TV would be like nothing. Hey, we won't.
Well, hell, look at Blu-ray. Look at Blu-ray.
Yeah.
If you were
exactly,
and if you were one of the chumps who went out and bought it when it first hit the market. And paid what, $500, $750, $1,000 for a Blu-ray?
$1,000 for a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
$600 for the PlayStation, which was a good deal because it had Blu-ray in it.
Right. But you know, if you were an early adopter, well, that you know, they put it out there for the early adopters, and it applies to iPhones and all kinds of other gadgets, PlayStations, and yada yada yada.
Uh-huh.
If you're an early adopter, you're helping to let them recover cost on the front end. So that later on they can offer it for less money. But even when it comes down, to $300 or $400, there's still an abundance of profit left inside it. My God, I got a story here. I got a story here, Albert, and this too is tangential, but it applies. Washington State wild salmon fishermen who sell their salmon to the middleman.
Mm-hmm.
Are now shipping those salmon to China to be deboned and shipped back to the United States. A spokesman said that there are 17 bones inside a salmon that are best removed by hand, and it can be done cheaper in China and shipped back than it can be done in the United States.
That's not cheaper. See, these people, You know, that's the kind of stuff that pisses me right off the edge. That ain't cheaper. It's not cheaper to do crap like that. It's not cheaper to buy something at that cost and then, that's just
blown. There was a time in the 19th century when laundry was shipped to Hawaii for washing and shipped back to San Francisco.
How does that make any sense?
It doesn't. It only makes sense, Albert, within the context of abusing the person doing the work.
As I say, it's not sustainable. That's not sustainable fishing practices. What the hell is that?
But I remember months ago when John Fox and I had a conversation on the Horn Section about shipping lobsters on daily flights from Maine to Las Vegas. So that they could be served in Tony restaurants there. If you want a Maine lobster, get off thy blessed assurance and go ye unto Maine. That's where it tastes best anyway. You know, my kids got a little dose of that, Albert. Their aunt and their uncle, my sister and my brother-in-law, whom I love dearly, came up from the Gulf Coast this past August. I even took a night off, I think, if I recall correctly. And they brought with them shrimp that was literally 24 hours out of Bayou Le Batre. And I want to tell you that that tasted better, sweeter. I mean, that when it's that fresh, it tastes like it's got the butter built into it, and you don't have to dip it in anything.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And my brother-in-law, the kid's uncle, did all the work of preparing it his special way. And we sat and we made absolute fools of ourselves over that shrimp. Now, fast forward a little bit. We're in the grocery store. Frozen shrimp is on sale. $10 a bag. Hey, kids, want to get a couple of bags of shrimp? I'll make a big old mess of gumbo, or we can have it fried or boiled. The kids, almost as if on cue, Albert said, "Nah, Dad, I'm not up for shrimp so much anymore since I had the real thing." And I had one of those beautiful little epiphanies where deep inside myself, I went, "Yes, yes, they're getting it. Oh, Water Helen, it has a name."
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. That's, yeah, I love those. I love it when people get like that, because, I mean, that's what's going to change things. That's the kind of things that are going to change things. I think, you know, this is...
Well, it's your wife that doesn't like tomatoes, isn't it?
She's a little iffy with them, but...
Yeah, because it's those styro things that come green from Florida or Texas or Chile or where, whatever.
That's
we
right.
talked about this one night.
Yes, indeed.
Because they don't taste like a tomato.
No, they don't. They don't taste like anything. They taste like watery.
But the high priests of Holy Prophet and Consumer Communion say that you're supposed to think that those pale, white, barely pink, revolting little crunchy cubes that they dump on top of your taco, well, that's a tomato. The hell it is.
That's how it is with everything, though. That's how it is, I mean, with organic bananas and, you know, fair trade coffee. I mean, fair trade coffee, the nice thing about fair trade coffee is it's kind of guilt-free in terms of drinking it, because you realize that nobody is being subjugated to live in absolute total squalor just so you can have a cup of coffee. Pay a little bit more, but at the same time, you know, just having something be guilt-free is almost as good as doing it yourself and picking your own beans and doing all that. It wouldn't be that kind of substitute. It's I guess you would call it in that respect a do-it-yourself substitute, because you realize you're paying a fair price for a product and you're doing something in that respect that's better for everybody, because most time it's fair trade, it's organic. Now, organic essentially just means no pesticides. Well, it also means a totally different way of cultivating it. And, you know, that's also good news. I mean, we got to look at the positive, Bob. Yes, yes, unfortunately, people have been killed. Yes, unfortunately, these things continue. However, the spotlight now is totally on this aspect of the American culture. And people, I think they've rejected it. There was nobody out this weekend. I mean, virtually nobody. I was out, I had things to go run and do and stuff like that in terms of from friends and LAN party and this. I got the computer work and everything's great. But, you know, when we sit here and, you know, I was looking around and I didn't see nobody. There was nobody out there. And I was out on Friday. I didn't see anybody. I saw people, but it wasn't like I've seen it in the past. And it's, I mean, heck, if the system that got us to a point like we did in terms of Friday, this system's not sustainable, period, because, look, people can't do it anymore. I mean, they're just in terms of just financially, you just financially can't dump your money on this aspect. You know, and you can't just sit there and keep dumping your money into these throwaway, cheap-ass things. You know, when you sit there and you think about, you know, the energy involved with shipping fish back to China or mainland.
Yeah, fish that was caught in, you know, the Great Northwest to China and back for the purpose of removing 17 bones.
It's ridiculous. It's not only that. I mean,
it makes sense to the corporate masters, because they can buy they can buy the S-class Mercedes instead of the E-class Mercedes if they just make sure and take away some American jobs in Washington State.
Well, there, you see, like, and that's that whole deal.
It's Friedmanomics.
They're about the bottom line. They don't care about the true cost of these things. You know, I mean, just the true cost of wasting on petroleum to ship this tank. I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah, okay, granted, all right. So it costs this much today, but all that's going to do is it's just going to further increase the price down the road. And you know, that's something in terms of, you know, survival of the species. That's a, these telling you, Bob, these people need to get cut out. These people need to be, you know, aborted in that whole mindset that they have created. I think, you know, when we talk about the bailouts and all this other stuff, I mean, heck, the market just lost today all the gains it made last week. You know,
oh yeah, it lost it all. 638 points gone.
Gone. And, you know, it's, well, people didn't shop the way that they expected it to, which makes, not for, I didn't understand, it makes me.
You know, I wonder, you know, I read the blurb on the 638-point nosedive, Albert, and I asked myself, because it had that, you know, Weasley language, and on fears of, and Ben Bernanke had a hangnail. You know how they write about Wall Street.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I sat there and said to myself, I wonder if the Walmart story could do that to the market, if maybe the corporate monsters are finally figuring out that some of us are on to them.
Mm-hmm. They're afraid.
Pray louder, afraid. Christian. Your God can't hear you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know.
I do see, at least I like to, you know, kid myself to thinking I can see. I just see that there is going to be a pole shift in the direction. I mean, you know, Obama's pissing me off. But, you know, the thing is everything that's going on right now is bigger than him. It's bigger than who he picks in his cabinet. It's bigger than Walmart. It's bigger than all this. It's bigger than all of us, but because it's all of us combined. You know, what's going on around the world and going on right here at home, you know, is going to force us to make a decision. And, you know, it's going to be one of these things where, you know, we either decide to invest in ourselves or, you know, and then maybe go without some things for a little bit, you know, or, you know, do we invest in our futures and, you know, and just invest it to cash out? Are we just going to cash out our chips and just, you know, let it continue what happened in the last, you know, 8 years on a more rapid pace? And I personally don't see us going in that direction. I don't see people deciding that. I hear people now talking about things that I never would have heard them talk about, and it warms my heart. When I see that Black Friday don't make nobody black, man, that just makes me smile. And yeah, all right, granted, people are out of a job, this and this and that. Well, you know, everybody's in the same boat, everybody's got the same crap sandwich, and everybody's got to take a bite of it, okay? And, you know, sometimes this, you know, getting this crap over with is like pulling out a tooth. Oh, you know, just what, you're going to let it hang in there until the other tooth completely pushes it out and it's still hanging by a strand of flesh? It's like, you know, we have to jump, we have to go, we have to do this stuff now. We cannot sit there and continue to just say, oh, yeah, let's try to make another Black Friday. Let's pull this system along for another year. It's not sustainable. It's dead. It's virtually dead. This is weakened at Bernie's. Okay, that's what we got. We got this disgusting mindset, okay, that this old paradigm that we're dragging around with us, like an albatross or a tire on fire or whatever you want to call it, you know, however analogy, you know, makes you grasp it, you know, this thing is going to be the end of us if we don't reject it. It's like a fishbone in a cat's throat. You know what I'm saying. This is not it's not sustainable to have a store where you can go to work at a store and get killed by trampling people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
Right. But see, but again, you know, the problem therein lies with Walmart's employment policies.
Walmart's dead. Walmart's over. They are gone, trust me when I tell you. Okay? Walmart's days are over. Walmart will die faster than Sears. Okay, see, and Sears is still hanging on, but Walmart will die.
They had to partner up with Kmart.
Yeah, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Didn't they? Yeah.
But, you know, I don't see any signs of, I drove by Walmart earlier today and the parking lot was packed, baby. It was packed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all right. That's fine. They're done. I mean, they're walking dead. They're walking dead. Think about it. You got to figure the overhead that a place like that has. Okay? You got to figure that the greed that we all know is at the very heart of this place, okay? If that's not sustainable on the macro level of Wall Street, okay, then how is it going to be sustainable on a more micro level with Walmart? It's just not. If it wasn't sustainable for the Roman Empire, it's not going to be sustainable for us. If it wasn't for the British Empire, it's just the same kind of macro all the time. And, you know, nowadays I just feel that, you know, we're coming to an end of this whole entire rope, because the only thing that allows this party to continue as it does is the cheap energy that we have. Okay? Now, if we don't make some sort of...
Cheap by externalized factors.
Exactly. Well, exactly. But if we don't make some sort of sidestep, and I think everybody's starting to realize this. I mean, I think people are realizing, man, granted, gas is super cheap right now. $1.90, heck, I just want to drive everywhere.
Hey, did you know that Obama's, I cruise around Democratic Underground when I get a little chance. Did you know that Obama's appointment, and I saw this on a thread that went, oh, my God, Obama's choice for national security advisor is Toby Keith fan. And so I went to the linked article, and I actually read up about the guy.
Mm-hmm.
His name is General Jones. I forget what his name is. General Perspicacious Jones or whatever. Retired general. He's got his retirement, and then he went to work. And so this is the whole thing I was reading down. Yeah, who cares? Toby Keith. Okay, so what? But then I found out what he's been doing since he stopped generaling. You know what that is? Why, he's been working for the United States Chamber of Commerce.
Oh.
And I don't mean in the mailroom. He has been a top policy analyst for the energy division of the United States Chamber of Commerce. Ring any bells? Do you know who those people are? Those are the people who are behind, at least in part, things like America's energy independence depends on coal. That's right. The new national security advisor is nothing but another filthy coal whore.
Mm.
Charming, ain't it?
No, it's not. He's not impressing me at all. And, you know, I understand, you know, ooh, the book stops with me. Well, you better prove it. Because, I mean, you know, I mean, it's not a joke. You know,
I'm going to get all Missourian on that. Show me.
I'm just saying.
I am too. I'm just saying, you know, buck stops with you. You're the guy with the vision.
Yeah.
It's going to take a whole bunch of vision to get over an old coal whore.
Exactly.
Lawyer for Chiquita Bananas.
Yeah. And Walmart. Don't forget that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. We got corporate counsel for Walmart on the Obama cabinet. We've got an old coal whore. Former general as a national security advisor, and we've got corporate counsel for Chiquita Brands.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh-wee, that's some change I can believe in.
And I've seen under the dress enough to not want to look anymore. And, you know, but the thing is, and this is what's really funny, you know, Obama's super popular at the moment, and he will absolutely crater 10 times faster than Bush. Because what has been the fire that's been ignited?
Well, the risk there was that any Democrat elected to this term of the presidency was going to. I mean, the machine is already rolling. After all, how many places in the for-profit only media have you heard the words "Obama recession"? Guy's not even in office, and it's his recession.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to allow that to stand, but I'm also not going to, you know, hear this bullcrap term of team of rivals to stand either.
No, that's BS, too.
And that's on our side over here, too. Oh, it's a team of rivals, just like Abraham Lincoln. Well, you know, Abraham Lincoln got his head blown off, okay? And so, you know.
Part and parcel because of the machinations of that team of rivals, we might add.
And of course,
Flush Flimball is out there saying, my friends, the appointment of Hillary Clinton is pure genius on Barack Obama's part. After all, what's the best way to keep the woman from running against you in 2012? Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. They back with that other fresh bottle of pills yet?
I can actually see some sort of... I mean, as I say, it depends on how... It depends on how much like Kaiser Soze Barack Obama really is. If you know,
I haven't gone to that one for a while.
Well, we have to because it's kind of brilliant that, you know, if you think about it, you know, maybe he is pissed that she did what she did in the re-election. You know, he's like all smiles and everything else like that. And, you know, maybe, hey, you know what, Hillary, you just did this, 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 and this. Okay, oh, I'll give you a job. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, I'll make you secretary. Oh, you want a private bat phone? Oh, sure. Oh, would you like this? Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, you know, where were you on this meeting? You're fired. I mean, it could literally be like that.
Or just keep her in there and be mighty hard for her to. I mean, flush phlegm ball.
What is she going to do? Fire her.
But I honest to God don't think that'll happen. I mean, Bill Clinton made real, as opposed to the 8 years of George W. Bush, Bill Clinton made real attempts to get something going as far as a peace process in the Middle East. You know, by in the Middle East, I mean a peace process going between the Palestinians and the Israelis. Mm-hmm. And then George Bush came into office and said, well, you know, I don't believe in nation building. So I think there's a chance that maybe there will be a decent focus on that process. Or some attempt at it. There kind of has to be. And in light of that, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, that she can, you know, she'll probably make a run at it. But, you know, I'm still waiting for the liberal to get appointed to this cabinet. Secretary. You know, if the new Secretary of Labor is some dude from Price Waterhouse.
Yeah. Well.
You know, or one of the big union busting firms. Mm-hmm. Now I'm gonna have. You know, I'm. Look, I ain't getting rich doing this. I ain't getting nothing doing this. So I might as well enjoy the hell out of my principles.
That's right.
You know, if you're getting $40 million a year, you can get yourself a big old junk habit and hate yourself for the 3 hours a day you're not on the air and fly around in your own private Gulfstream 5 and all of that crap and live in a 26,000-square-foot mansion with a cat. That ain't me. And that's not you or anybody else who participates in this program. You can't, now granted, you can't cook principles, but you know what? Having principles can make it easier to choke down whatever it is you do have.
I agree.
So, you know, for those who, oh, you know, give him a chance, Bob. He's not even in office yet. Yeah, and I've said that.
Yeah, but give him a chance.
Sure, chance, absolutely. I'll sit, but, you know, on the front end, I got to be a little bit disturbed when I see an old coal whore going in as the national security advisor.
Yes, indeed. You know, and I mean, I'll give him a chance.
Because when coal means national security, that means my house don't matter. That means communities here in Appalachia don't matter. That means the poisoning can go on. The blasting can go on. The wells can keep being poisoned.
Because it's national security.
I'll tell you a good thing, though, buddy, and I know this, you know, and maybe you don't quite hear the ramifications of it, but they're not going to be doing that so much here in Wisconsin. And, you know, I know they always say, as this, 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 but Wisconsin has really been a trendsetter in this country in certain things. And I like it. I like it for that. I'm not a native, but I do like that for that. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, they're not going to be doing that coal, 500-acre coal ash dump 10 miles from my house. And in turn, what I hear from that is they kind of realize that we're not going to be burning coal because they are not going to replace the coal-burning plant here. It's just not – there's not a new one going up because there really isn't a lot of room for another one to go up, first off. And second of all, they realize and they see that they know the winds are changing. They know the winds are changing with all the windmills going up and all the solar panels going up. And, you know, it's like, and I was talking about this today with my buddy out there, you know, one thing that we can be hopeful in terms of Barack Hussein Obama being president is that he might listen. He hopefully he will listen to when we say, hey, you know, we need to do something with this energy thing, and these guys come back to him and say, well, you know, we can't make these huge, this huge solar power plant, you know, and that he would sit there and go, wait a minute. Instead of developing, like we did with, you know, developing a pen that could write in space, you know, for $20 million or $200 million, however much money we wasted on that, we're like, well, why don't we bring a pencil and put these solar panels on everyone's roof? You know, this is the mantra that needs to be regurgitated and said. It needs to be said in the supermarket, online at the bank. It needs to be said everywhere. If you pull next to somebody and their window's down, you say, wouldn't you like solar panels on your house? And blah, blah, blah. Just sit there and you see, make eye contact with somebody, you spit out solar panels on your roof. What do you think of that? I mean, that's what I've been doing lately, and it's one of these things that I have never, ever, 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 ever heard one person tell me, oh, that's not a good idea. Everybody thinks that's a good idea. Everyone.
Sure. Yeah.
And the more we put that out there, the more we sit there, the more that it's echoed on the horn, the more that the people who listen to the horn that go and talk on the other radio shows, that they go, and the more they say this, the more it will change. Like, our echo chambers are like taking your car mats out. Because that's where we're at. Our asses are stuck in the mud, and we need to take the car mats out and put them under the tires and get the hell out of this ditch. Because, you know, we can't stay here all night. We're in a Floridian swamp, and there's critters out there. And, you know, we need to completely, you know, we need to save Bob's house. We need to save Bob's house. We need to save Albert's house. We need to save our environment and everything else like that. And there's orders of magnitude of change that has to come, I hope. I hope whatever he's doing in terms of national security is going to be minuscule compared to where we need to go in terms of domestic policies. And have they named that? I mean, do we have the environmental guy? Do we have Kennedy yet? No.
No.
You know this? I mean,
no, we don't.
So maybe, you know, maybe he's saving the best for last. He's kind of getting rid of this kind of thing. And, you know, all right, let Hillary do her little thing and let her go play, you know, secretary or whatever. And let these people go and do this Homeland Security this and Homeland Security that. I hope that's not his biggest focus of reality. Because knowing that not attacking other countries and not sitting there subjugating these people to sweatshop labor and other humiliations and all these other dumping poisons in their world and everything, sucking all their energy out and raping them for this and that and this, that kind of thing will keep us safe at home. You know, not biometric implants or, you know, retinal scans, that kind of stuff's not going to keep us safe, okay? That's this kind of stuff that's just going to take our liberties. And I hope someone that Barack Hussein Obama, with his, you know, 12 years as a constitutional law professor, I hope this is something that he remembers. Okay, and I hope it is just some one of these things that it just really, you know, national security, and I want national security to say see you later. I understand we kind of need it to a point. I think everyone should understand that we really, really don't. We don't. This is not something that we need to do. As a human race, as a human species, this is not something we need to do. Or in terms of focus, how much money do we put on this? 30%, 40%, 40%, 50% of our freaking taxes go to this, you know, military industrial complex. You know, I hope that these are things that, you know, we can eventually get shifted. I know we got Kohl's. I know we got Walmart and Chiquita Banana and all these other, you know, just soulless, destitute
slugs, 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 sleaze, slugs.
Yeah, they're just nasty, and I can't, you know, I really can't sit here and condone it, but I can just say that, you know, if he doesn't do what he should be doing, we can ride him. We can ride him just like I'd love to see a camp outside his house. You know, I mean, the thing is he really cannot afford to not toe a left-wing line. Because as we go into this economic, you know, just disintegration, you know, the whole halcyon haze of, you know, where people that have these, you know, McMansions and this and that, and everybody thinks they're doing well because they have, you know, twice as much debt as they can earn in 10 years. You know, when we sit here and look at a world like that, you know, it's actually coming to a complete another collapse. You know, these are the things that wake people up and say, man, this is not where we need to be going. And, you know, I know that there are people out there that, you know, they have this thought or that thought. But I tell you what, buddy, I tell you what, you know, now more than ever is reckoning day. Now more than ever is the days of change. And change is not something that, you know, he might have, like, it's like, you know, he might be like that little kid at an all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet that, you know, said, oh, that sounds good. I'm gonna say that. and then got it on his plate, and it turned out to be, you know, like a pure wasabi root or something. Now he's going to have to eat it.
I can't breathe.
Because I can't breathe. Ooh, my lungs hurt. I mean, and that might be very well be where Barack Obama, and, you know, he might not, you know, maybe he'll be like, you know, maybe he'll think he'll be like Roosevelt.
Well, look, I'm not trying to say that the man doesn't have a chance.
No.
All I ever asked for out of the 2008 election was a chance.
It's better than McCain.
It's miles ahead of, miles, light years. Yeah, because if we had elected John McCain, we would be so screwed that the light from screwed would be 1,000 light years getting to us. So, yeah, it is better. It is decidedly better. And you know, I'm this is no indication that I'm not cutting the guy some slack, but, you know, people need to know. I need to know. You need to know. We need to know what we're facing.
Yes.
And frankly, I'm giving Barack Obama slack. I ain't giving 10 cents worth of slack to a guy who defends Chiquita Brands, when they're busted for supporting terrorism. Oh, hell no. He's the burden of proof is on Eric Holder. The same thing for General the Zebediah Jones or whoever this creep is. The burden is on him, Albert, to prove to me that he is not a coal whore. And I know you can't prove a negative. I know that. But I need to see some non-coal whore behavior out of him. Because if I catch him standing on a street corner, you know, all tarted up with a little coal dust on his face, I'm going to know where he is, what he is, and where he's been.
That's right. Call him on it.
Because, you know, the United States Chamber of Commerce is, you know, there is nothing that the United States Chamber of Commerce does that's good for anybody except the humongous industry, the Wall Street, and the insurance giants, you know, the corporate welfare queens out there, and the coal industry, and oil, and gas, and you get the idea.
Yes, indeed.
So I don't have any problem whatsoever putting the burden on him.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what? The people who breathe the poisons that come from coal-fired power plants all over this country, and the people who have their homes, their livelihoods, and their very well-being ruined, the futures of their children and grandchildren destroyed for coal, we've borne that damn burden long enough. So I got nothing putting the burden on him.
Hey, I have one disturbing little thing you just reminded me. This is disturbing. I had my children were being watched by the grandparents, in-laws, and
oh no.
Yeah, and I do like my father-in-law. He's an evangelical, but and he's a hunter and all this other stuff, but he does. He has, we're not allowed to say drink the Kool-Aid anymore, but we can certainly say don the Nikes and black sweatpants and drank the Barbie cocktail. He's certainly done that. And he said something to me. He's like, you know, the way he said it just kind of made me, it hurt deep down the way he said this. He's like, well, yeah, we're not allowed to have mercury anymore in terms of the light bulbs. In terms of the thermostat switches. So but the thing is
I was rummaging through the cabinets, put a little mercury on my cornflakes this morning. Them damn liberals won't let me do it anymore.
That's what I mean. Sometimes, and then he gives me, you know, venison that he shoots, and sometimes I'm like, I don't know if I want to eat this. Because I don't want to turn batshit crazy like that.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, you know, as long as you're not eating the deer brains, you're in pretty good shape. But, you know, there's a lot of nerve tissue next to that lovely little tenderloin, too. Oh, I've just put off the dadgummit. Sorry, vegetarian. But, you know, and that's the stuff that's generally healthy for you to eat because it's not all hormoned and steroided up and antibiotic'd up, and it's very low fat. You know, that's why it's harder to cook a buffalo steak or a bison steak than it is to, say, cook a beef steak because it ain't got all that marbling. And the line between medium rare and shoe leather is a hell of a lot finer. but enough of it. Hey, Albert, we've lit up the phones, and I hope there's still some people that are willing to wait. But great conversation, brother.
Always. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye now.
Keep them real.
No, I'm trying. Just keeping it real. That's all. Later. Our buddy Albert in Wisconsin. Email rolling in from our buddy Victor. The people that voted for Senator Obama expecting change should be feeling betrayed by now. It's going to be business as usual in D.C. Well, you know, Calvin Coolidge said a long time ago that the business of America is business. And frankly, the business of Washington, D.C. is business as usual, and business as usual is business. It ain't you, and it ain't me. But, you know, there was a movement created. We saw in the election of Barack Obama what can happen when people want things. And I'm not trying to put off any of the diehard Obama supporters. I'm not. I went and voted for him just like millions of, 60 million, whatever, other Americans did. Damn straight I did. But you know what? I'm 45 years old. And I don't just take people's word for it anymore. Nobody's, right or left. I hope you don't either. Don't take my word for it. Go look up what General Ephanias Jones's record is. Dude worked for the United States Chamber of Commerce in the Energy Division, and I don't think he was licking envelopes. Go see what the Energy Division of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce does. And there's a direct line that runs from the United States Chamber of Commerce to the black and tarry water that runs out of faucets in southern West Virginia. By God, there is. And all over Appalachia. And there's a direct line between a kid with asthma in New Jersey and the United States Chamber of Commerce. Or a mother whose newborn is 10 IQ points less intelligent than it would otherwise have been if she didn't have so damn much residual mercury in her system from coal-fired power plants. It's all there. But don't take my word for it. Don't. All right. Now let's find out what's going on. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita. How are you, dear?
I'm fine. How are you?
Long weekend. Mighty long weekend.
Frustrated?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. I was interested in what you had to say about that Walmart. It made me think. I think you're right. Why not take all those people in? You know, that's what they do. Did to Cindy and them when they did a little protest to take them to jail.
Sure.
And I wonder how many of those people even realize what happened in their involvement in it.
Well, I think if you had a prosecutor who had any gumption or guts, they'd be working on a case against Walmart, because that's the only thing that's going to rein this stuff in. And I don't want to hear the right wing, "Oh, we can't get no $800 TVs no more."
Well, I don't know if you read that little thing I sent about Pravda.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Look at what they're saying now. We're killing one another for junk from China. And that's from Pravda now.
Yeah.
That's a good article.
Exactly. Well, it's true. It's absolutely true.
It said, wonder what's going to happen if we have to start food fights when we get low on food. Wow.
And, you know, maybe it's because there was such a media clampdown during, because it was, of course, a tyranny. But people stood online or in queue, whatever phrase you want to use, for things as simple as bread, potatoes, milk in the old Soviet Union. But you didn't read a hell of a lot about riots.
No.
The American people, and this is the part that's just like a white hot wire running through my poor little brain, Juanita. The American people can be whipped into a frenzy and can kill over a cheap TV or a cheap laptop.
Oh yeah.
Just
let that sink
in for a few minutes, and you'll be like, it's like you've been poleaxed. You'll just stunned.
Yeah, there were some other incidents, you know, where people fought and all. And I remember when those Cabbage Patch dolls first came out.
Yep, yep.
We had people fist fighting in the store. You know, I mean, roll around punches.
You know, I'm not trying to be mean to our children or anything here, Juanita, but they're all, you know, the youngest one will be 12 this spring. And we have done consumer orgies for them in the past.
Uh-huh.
And it's just not, one, it is not possible this year. It just isn't.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling just gut-rending guilt over it because, you know, that's what the religion of consumerism does to you.
Yeah, tradition.
But, their mother and I have looked at him and said, listen, we're going to have a lovely dinner on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be together. We're not going to argue with one another. We're going to get along. We're going to enjoy our company. We'll decorate the house. But there's not going to be a big gift-giving orgy here.
Yeah.
And I laid it down to my kids. I said, don't you dare. If you want to make me something, make me something.
Yeah.
If you want to give me you want to give me the best gift you could possibly give, then you work for the next 365 days on remembering not to squabble and remembering to love each other as your mother and I love you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best gift you could give me, and their mother's giving them the same speech.
To have your family, that's the best thing of all.
And this, you know, what happened on Friday is just, I don't know, it's the peanut on top of the poop pile for me. if there was any last bit of me that thought that going and getting stuff had anything to do with Christmas.
It doesn't.
I'm way past it. I'm way past it now.
Not what a lot of people think Christmas. Is, you know, it's just not that. I know when my mother died, I went into debt for a bunch of stuff from my child, and you know, I was having to work and everything, and I just it was a guilt thing, and half the stuff you didn't.
This time of year,
and I certainly couldn't afford it.
This time of year, and I know you had parents in the same situation, Juanita, so it's appropriate that we should talk about this. This time of year, I start thinking about what Christmas was like for me as a child, and yeah, there was a lot of fun toys. There were.
Yeah.
But it wasn't ridiculous. And my stocking, my Christmas stocking, always had a handful of walnuts and pecans and almonds and Brazil nuts and hazelnuts and a couple of big oranges and an apple. And, you know, we had those all year long.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, when I was old enough to ask the question, and I'm not talking about being 12 or 13 like, our kids are now. I'm talking about being, 7 or 8 and sitting there munching happily away on, navel orange or whatever.
Yeah,
and looking at my mom and saying, why do I get this in my stocking? We have this all the time. And she and Dad explained to me that for them on Christmas Day,
that would have been something
1930 else. Or 33, but that was Christmas.
Oh yeah,
that when you lived in snow-covered West Virginia in December. There weren't any oranges, and there weren't any bananas, because it was hard enough to get them here when the growing season was on, and so it was a real treat.
Yeah.
And so I've perpetuated that in our Christmas tradition here.
Yeah.
And my kids think I'm just crazier than a sprayed roach. We can buy nuts in the store anytime, Dad. And then I told them the story that my parents told me. And it's so cool when I can see the little lights go on and the wheels start turning inside their heads.
Well, you know, I don't know if you remember when I called in and I told a few experiences about my daddy during the Depression. Actually, that was several years after, a number of years, not several years, but a number of years after Roosevelt was in. And things were better then.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that was a better time. And, but I remember my daddy telling me about it. He went to, after he and my mother got married, back then, you didn't think about having money saved. You know, you just got married. They just got married. They didn't have rings or nothing. But, but anyway, he said that you'd go to where, their daddy's, and they both came from large families, and he said that he'd go there one time, he met all they had was sweet potatoes to eat. And so my granddaddy would say the blessing over it and say, come on in and join us, didn't apologize. He just gave what he had.
Sure.
And they said even when I was little that down here, they said that all we had to eat for a while was, and said I didn't complain about it.
Nope, not at all.
I had my angelic sort of thing then, a little bit. but the thing about it was that Roosevelt, my daddy said that if Roosevelt hadn't come in, just like you were talking about the difference in Obama, we hope, and the other guy. Data said that they just wouldn't have lived. They couldn't have lived much longer the way things were. It was so bad.
And of course, a Republican doesn't give a damn if working folks or poor folks drop dead.
Oh, no, of course not. We're dispensable, or whatever you call it. We don't
we're dispensable, we're expendable, we're disposable.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, disposable, that's the best word.
Well, you know, the dad always told me that the coal company cared more about an old bank mule than they did a coal miner. Because, the bank mule, they'd have to pay money to replace. The coal miner, they'd just go out and find some other sucker to come in and do the work.
Yeah. Well, my folks, when they came down to Florida, worked in a citrus industry, that was about the only thing that was down here. And they had to work. They had to work as much as the people said they had to. They could go up and down. Okay, you got to come in on Sunday. Anybody that don't want to, we'll get somebody else.
Yeah.
Cuss them out.
Sure.
And that is what
an America without any kind of laws protecting the rights of working people looks like.
And I want to go back to that about what you were telling about the man that was trampled, the young man that was trampled. I didn't know it was a young man. I thought it was an older guy.
34, I think.
Wow. And he was from another country.
Yeah, he was Haitian.
Oh, well, of course. But I bet a lot of those people that were in that crowd, I bet they thought that people like Cindy Sheehan and all like that, I bet they think they're just horrible, terrible people. I bet a lot of them think that Sarah Palin is just this wonderful woman, And they don't realize that they should be at least questioned. I totally agree with you there.
You can't have a riot without somebody starting it.
Yeah.
The cattle don't sing.
They were banging on the doors.
Yeah, because there was the pressure of 2,000 people behind him.
Yeah, and he couldn't. He just started getting it open when they pushed it in. He barely got it unlocked.
Now, I'm just hearing from our pal Cindy up in the Great Northwest
The police are studying Walmart security video to identify the perpetrators of the stampede. Well, damn it. Pardon me, Juanita, but damn it. The CEO of Walmart and the vice president of marketing and advertising aren't on that video. And they're the ones who started it.
Yes. Oh, you know, I had a job. My last job, I was security for a retirement home. And had the locks didn't work on the outside doors. And I was security. Can you imagine?
I know.
I was security.
Well,
you couldn't tell those people how dangerous they were.
You know, it's so funny, not funny, haha, but funny, ironic.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's funny, ironic that, for instance, when you had some guy who'd been in the mines up here for 30 years and finally too broke down to go in anymore because of all the injuries he'd received over the course of his life, his work life in the mines, he'd try to get permanent and total disability through workers' compensation in this state.
Uh-huh.
Because of the combination of his injuries adding up to basically a total disability. And the way the structure was set up, you'd have a hearing and you'd have depositions and everything, and the company always, you know, there's this list of people who would always show up on the company side of things, and they'd come in and say, well, this man by my, and they'd make the poor guy go and jump through hoops and have a vocational analysis. And,
uh-huh.
and, you know, how long can you stand? Lift this. Can you lift that? And just put the poor human being through hell.
Yeah.
And then they'd issue this report saying, well, I find that this person is capable of sedentary labor and should not have disability. He should have a job as a parking lot attendant or a security guard.
Mm-hmm.
I had that happen
to a friend of mine that he became disabled, and they put him to work as a security guard.
Now, how's a disabled guy going to provide security?
Right. And,
I mean, this isn't Mayberry, and it's not Barney with one bullet in his pocket.
No.
America has been made into a very, very, very dangerous place.
And, you know, when you read that article by the guy from Pravda, it's a eye opening, you know, because it's so true.
Sure it is.
I mean, but that they realize it over there. And there are a lot of ugly Americans, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, this from the article you referenced, just so everybody else can hear it too. To watch an image of Americans breaking down doors at 0500 or earlier to get into stores is reminiscent of a third world hunger stampede when grain is made available.
Uh-huh.
But no, there's no grain at the end of this stampede, only Chinese-made goods, the same goods that have driven many of these mindless consumers out of their well-paid jobs. The images to those outside the USA are horrible. People bursting like stampeding cattle, their eyes consumed with only mindless, Christless, soulless greed.
Yep.
It's the absolute truth. Hell, I'd understand it if people were rioting for food. There were, you know, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, people have rioted for food.
In Haiti.
And sure, because you are at such a desperate state.
Yeah.
That not getting that food literally means the end of your life and, more importantly, probably the lives of your children.
Of your family, right. And that hurts worse than...
And yet the mindset that drives that is transferred onto the American consuming animal such that they equate not being able to get an $800 plasma television as...
Tragedy
and the end of life as they know it.
Well, you know, I remember seeing, they used to have a show on CNN, you know, where they have people come in and ask questions of guests. I don't remember the show, but this was right after the war in Iraq started, or Afghanistan, whatever. Anyway, Bill Maher was on there. And this young guy, I mean, he was against the war, you know. And this young guy got up and said, "You just don't want me to have my SUV." He said, or whatever you call it.
Yeah,
he said,
right.
And Bill Maher said, "What are you talking about? You think it's war's fault so you can have a big vehicle?" And the guy was in earnest.
We've got a running gag in the family here, Juanita, where if we're, you know, going grocery shopping or whatever and we find a close parking spot, everybody in the car yells, "Parking fairy!" Because we've been blessed by the parking fairy with a close parking spot. Meanwhile, the other side of that joke is we then look around at all the other people circling looking for another parking fairy spot.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes when the parking fairy doesn't bless us, you know, we wind up with a distant parking space, and I'll pull into it, and the kids, "Aw, Dad," and I'll turn around and say, "What? You think the Constitution of the United States guarantees you a close parking space? Get your haunches on the pavement and go ye by Shanks Mares to the store." Sometimes they really despise me, Juanita.
You're good, Dad.
No, I'm a bad one, you know. "Hey, Dad, I want..." And they're so sick of this one, they could just scream, "You want? You want? You want?"
Mm-hmm.
And they now... And we've bypassed everything but the punchline now, because for years I looked at them and said, "What do little froggies want?" "Huh?" This is when they were little. "Little froggies want wings so they won't bump their little butts on the ground when they hop."
That was cute.
"Tell me again what you want." But, you know, yeah, I'm a brute.
Oh, Lordy. Well, you know, it's, and a lot of it, you know, I feel like that, I hate to keep saying this, but a lot of it is the church's fault. People are not being taught.
Sure. No, they're being taught the direct antithesis. That's what all this prosperity gospel is about.
Yeah. And this guy,
If you're in the front of the line, Juanita, it's because Jesus wants you to have that $800 TV.
Uh-huh. And this one guy he's written books and all. Somebody gave me one. And he said that if you don't leave a fortune to your children, then you're committing child abuse. And I thought, well, sorry.
Yeah, well, you know, God forbid, and that's, you know, the trust fund babies. God forbid they should actually have to go out and do the kind of work, mm-hmm, that their parents did to get that fortune.
Yeah.
You know, I had a lot of them turn out bad. When Paris Hilton's granddaddy changed his will,
uh-huh,
and cut out a whole bunch of Paris, I thought, you know, good for you, Granddad.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the guy did work his ass off, and frankly, he, mm-hmm, he profited by the labor of oodles of underpaid hotel employees,
right,
to get that, and he's going to give a lot of it to charity instead of Paris. Well,
yeah,
good on you, Grandpa.
I think so, too.
Hey, Juanita, so good to hear from you, and I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. And I'm all lit up here, so let's move along and see if everybody's hung up on me or if there's anybody else still there.
Okay.
All right, you take care. Bye now.
Bye.
I love it. You take care at both ends at the same time. Once more, with feeling. Thanks, Juanita. It's always good to hear from you. Let's see. And just a second. Hey, welcome to the program. Yeah.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Oh, not much. Let's see. Juanita was trying to think of the show Talk Back Live.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What they used to do about noon, I think.
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
Used to have the people
and,
in there.
And it was moderated by that woman that dated Flush Flimball for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah. Wasn't that the one they did there in the Omni there where CNN's headquarters is in Atlanta, or was that?
Yeah, that was at CNN HQ.
Until they decided we want to close most of this up and send everybody up to Washington.
Right. Yeah, chicken noodle queue.
Oh, talk about that. I sent you up on something I sent you today, a little bit of a diatribe on it. Isn't it amazing how MSNBC decides they want to be a cable news network, but amazingly enough, for Thanksgiving weekend, they decide to close the doors and put on the tape?
Yeah, they did kind of do that, didn't they?
I mean, I'm sitting there going, you know, I can understand you aren't going to get the A-team, you know, but you've got more than enough reporters at NBC that should be able to man the stuff over at MSNBC, especially when you have a major thing going on like over in India. You know, why aren't you all on the air 24/7 covering this? You know, I mean, that's what cable news is for, to me.
Yeah, to do the in-depth, constantly changing. Right, right. But you know what? Because we've got such a squirrely cable system, Luke. You know what I wound up doing? I wound up watching live coverage on the internet from an English-speaking Indian channel.
Oh, okay. That was probably better.
It was because you had a greater depth of understanding. And, you know, a couple of times I did flick over to Fox just to see what that was just an abomination.
Them and Chicken Noodle News, they got their five or six stories and didn't do anything else. They just kept replaying those five or six stories. It was like watching headline news. You know, I mean, after a while, you're going, I've seen this cycle before.
Well, CNN, Luke, CNN has quit on the operating philosophy that engendered it, that was hatched inside of Ted Turner's skull.
Well, the thing of it is, it's like, say, when you had something like that, they should have took CNN off and shoved everybody, watch CNN International. You know, that's what they should have done, should have shut CNN off and bring CNN International up, where you talk to the people in the different countries.
Yeah, which is a vastly different broadcast than CNN.
Yeah, of course, and as you said one time, they don't want to let people in America ever see that, because they'll want it.
No, and you know, God forbid that Americans should have been able to watch, say, Al Jazeera's coverage?
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Well, the thing that got to me was, over the weekend, you're sitting there going, every time I turn on Chicken Noodle News, they're sitting there trying to tell you it's Al-Qaeda, and it's like, no, you idiots, it's the Pakistani. It may have something, you know, maybe some people on the edges that may be connected to Al-Qaeda, but this is Pakistan. And it's the ISI. That's who...
Oh, yeah, you mean the guys that George Bush has been writing a check to for 7 years?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, the ISI has been supporting those guys for years. That's the Pakistanis' CIA.
Yeah, exactly. And they're absolutely up to their gizzards in
behind it. I mean,
in Islamic fundamentalists and, you know, people who, yeah, that crowd. But there's another element, that exists out of Bangladesh. And of course, this one of the things that I found sort of disgusting out of the Mumbai coverage was this line that I keep saying, saw that said, a group calling themselves Deccan Mujahideen is claiming responsibility. They have not claimed it directly to the Indian government, but they have claimed it via emails to media sources. And that was followed, Luke, by a sentence that said, international security analysts say this is highly unlikely the work of such a group because they've never heard of them before.
I'm sitting there going, when I was starting to hear that,
you heard that then?
Well, yeah, but did you hear last week? I guess it was this. No, it was on Sunday's show on Kurtz's show. He had on the guys that ran the fake Republican operative who claimed he'd sold out Palin from the McCain camp. I'm sitting there going, half this stuff you guys are getting, it could just as easily be international hoaxers doing it to you guys, and you're all running around. You might just as bad as the other side, waving your M1s or you know whatever above your head, firing off rounds. It's like,
but see,
you shoot 100 people, then ask, oh, were they the ones?
Yeah, well, but what you're identifying here, Luke, is the fundamental failing of real journalism.
Yeah.
Did you see that clip of CNN's Delhi correspondent, a female?
One who ducked when the blast went off?
No, the one who got surrounded by the crowd.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I saw that one.
Yeah, the really wasted, drunk crowd. Because you know what? Drunk, wasted sounds the same thing in either redneck or clipped Indian English. Because there's always some of this, you know.
But did you notice where one of the people were one of the groups was talking about going there where they were filming it and said, you know, we drove right up here. We essentially weren't challenged. Said, you know, there's no real, you know, they still aren't, there's still no real security up. Said, we drove almost all the way here without being challenged. It's like major, an attack in essentially the major city in the country. And essentially the police are just sort of like, yeah, let everybody go wherever they want to. I'm sorry, this is where you close off about 10 blocks in each direction, and you don't let nobody drive.
Doesn't seem like such a, it's not so difficult, is it? But, of course, what you'll see here is, and it's really a failure of what George H.W. Bush called the vision thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the Taj Mahal Hotel and the Oberoi Hotel will have absolutely rock-solid security now.
Oh.
Just like after September the 11th, 2001, we became obsessive compulsive about the airlines. Well, dummies, they're not going to do that again.
Well, you know, we've talked about that, you know, that in the late 90s, Al Gore was in charge of a I guess you call it sort of a fact-finding mission, whatever you want to, and they presented like 20 ideas to the aircraft industry. And said for about $2 billion, you can do all these things. And a bunch of them had things, stupid things, you know, like securing cockpit doors, you know, reinforcing them. You know, and the airlines industry said, you want us to spend $2 billion? Are you insane?
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. So instead, after 9/11, like in the first, 6 months of it, they spent over $16 billion getting the airlines up and running again. That's the government.
Right. But we've forgotten about that bailout, and we've forgotten that when we gave the money to the airlines, they laid off workers.
Yeah.
That we gave them the money so they wouldn't have to do.
You know, it's like this thing, you know, with the whole thing with the UAW and all this stuff. It's like, look, guys, either you pay it now, or you're going to turn around on the other side, and a whole bunch of these two income families, when one income disappears, you're going to have a whole bunch of mortgage problems. So, you know, that's going to jump up, and then we're going to have to pay on that. And then we're going to turn around, you know, like say, it is one thing right after the other. It's a domino. Either you do it now or you're going to pay worse later. I'm sorry they have to do either one, but that's the truth. If you don't pay and get that $25 or $30 billion for them now to keep them running, in a year you're going to be paying $100 billion just to keep the families afloat and to keep some cities from essentially collapsing into themselves.
Sure, and as far as the bailout's concerned, even the automotive bailout means more to me than the dummied up, rubed up, frauded up, faked up, ginned up, so-called bailout of Wall Street.
Well, you did notice the thing that they put all these stuff and all this crying and whining and gnashing of teeth about $25 billion for the car industry, but Citibank shows up and all of a sudden it's like, here's the money. Don't tell anybody we're giving it to you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was like that Eddie Murphy sketch from years and years ago on Saturday Night Live where he put on the white guy makeup.
Oh yeah.
You know the one where he goes to the bank first as a black guy and tries to get a loan. Oh, I'm sorry, we can't get you a loan. Puts on the white guy makeup and goes in. Oh, you want some money? Here's some money. And you want more money?
Another bag and another bag.
Yeah. And really that's the difference between Wall Street and Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made more valid by virtue of the fact that, you can't get away from the fact that there is a strong union presence in the big three automakers that does not exist on Wall Street. And, you know, it's interesting, Ron Gettelfinger, the head of the UAW, Luke, fired a little broadside at the state of Alabama over the weekend. He said that all these automakers go there because Alabama, like other states,
gives them everything.
Well, and if you want to read about these scams, Greg LeRoy's book, and Greg LeRoy was on the show, oh gosh, a couple of years ago now, but his book, The Great American Job Scam, lays it all out point by point by point by point.
Well, you know, right now Media Matters has been running that series where they're talking about the way that Fox Noise and them are running out the, was it $73 an hour auto worker? And they're going, So that's just a nice little number you all made up. Said, you know, you look into it, it's maybe about 40, maybe 45. And I said, you all are just adding everything in the thing to it. And it's like, when you look at the real numbers, that ain't it. You're wanting, you know, they're compounding it with, you know, and like I say, well, here's how much it is with all this stuff added in. And it's like, if you add everything in the book into it, and it's like, say, the way they're trying to add it, they're essentially adding all the pensioners in and all that. And it's like, I'm sorry, it's not $73 an hour. It's like $45 an hour, which ain't that much different than what Toyota and Honda are paying.
Well, and there's an inherent prejudice or snobbery in this anyway. And you'll hear it, you'll hear it periodically out of some conservative or right winger's mouth. Looking, well, who ever heard of a plumber making $45 an hour? What's a plumber do that's worth $45 an hour? But if I ask, or you ask, what does a Wall Street CEO do that's worth $15 million a year? Well, that's class warfare.
You know, it's like the old sign used to be up on the mechanics wall that said, I get that kind of money because it ain't because of what I do. It's because I know what to do with it.
Exactly. I used to hear these kind of things. You'd hear somebody coming back from, a meeting with their lawyer, maybe. And they'd say, I don't understand what's happened with this country. Any kind of a decent, freedom-loving country ought to have laws that the average man can understand and don't have to go hire no damn lawyer. And I was in law school at the time. And looked, and I had this particular guy I looked at, and I said, "You say that to your car mechanic too?"
I was gonna say, have you remember that commercial where the guy's on the phone with the guy when he's got the knife and telling him how to do the appendix operation?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, right. And that's the thing. I said, you know, when your timing belt breaks and you lunch a few valves. Do you tell your mechanic that your car ought to be simple enough for you to be able to fix it yourself? Because that's, you know, at the end of the day, these are all talking points that have flowed out of the right wing for a couple of generations now, Luke.
Oh, yeah. Oh, let me get back to something a minute ago. You were talking a minute ago. I've got a whole bunch of great nieces and nephews. God, I hate to count them all up. This year, what I'm doing is, I do this about every 4 or 5 years, I'm doing what I call retro Christmas. I go down to the Five and Dime or the Woolworths or the Emery's or whatever you got in your area. Go visit the things that you played with when you were a kid. You know, go get them a Slinky. Get them,
Dad, where's the remote for the Slinky? I think this one's defective.
We'll get them like, I got one of my nephews, like a bag of green army men. You know, things like this and go, now just think of it, kids, when I handed them out to them, this like 4 or 5 years ago I did this.
Now, did you get them the fireworks to play war with the army men with? Because you and I both know.
I know.
It's a lot more fun with fireworks.
Get like a silly putty and say, here's what we played with when we were kids. Now, if you want to tell me that you're put upon and your life is cruel.
Right.
Said, well, play with this for a couple hours and tell me how bad your wife is.
Well, you know, and what, remember, oh God, we're geezering, Luke. Remember how Silly Putty would pick up the ink off of the Sunday Funnies?
Mm-hmm.
And Silly Putty was the original Photoshop, really.
Yeah.
Because you could pick up that image off the Sunday Funnies, and then you could stretch Dick Tracy this way and twist him that way and make him look all funny. And lo and behold, you know, you want to do that with a digital image, it costs you $900.
But, you know, it's like saying, you know,
I did it for 29 cents when I was 8.
But, you know, I used to get the Green Army Man. You take a towel and throw it up in the air and have it land. That's your battlefield.
Sure.
And, that, you know, and you sit and play with that for... I remember when we were kids, you used to get the cardboard rollers out of the paper towel, play with them. God, you know, there's so many things, you know, that nowadays kids look at you like you're
cardboard
crazy.
Towel roll, little piece of wax paper and a rubber band, kazoo, boom.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And, you know, it's like I say, gang, I'm sorry, but when we were young, you had to entertain yourself, and when you want to tell them about having three channels on the TV, they look at you like, well, yes, that's right, when dinosaurs were on the earth. And you had to get up to change the channel.
Yeah, you know, I have learned in my own way where that Homer Simpson noise comes from. You know, the don't. Because when my kids will ask me things like, "Daddy, were there telephones when you were a boy?"
Well, think of this now.
Don't.
Most kids that probably 20 and under do not remember a dial telephone.
No, never seen one.
If you showed them one, they go, "Is that a new kind of phone?"
Yeah, it's all Scotty and Star Trek picking up the mouse and the computer. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? If you showed them a dial phone, they go, "How does that work? What makes it roll back around?"
Like, oh, I've got a little war going on here, because all three of them, and we're talking about the 14, 12, and 11 are something approaching apoplectic at their need for a cell phone.
Ah.
And I just, you know, I called Agnes over to my side, drew a little line in the floor and said, "This is the line in the sand. Imagine the sand. Use your imagination to put the sand there. And me, your mother, and the cell phones are on this side, and you're on that one. And there ain't going to be no cell phone." Oh, Dad.
Well, what you do is give them a bag full of quarters and go, "Here. And when you run out, then you get your own quarters." Back then it was like you had to find a payphone. Payphone, what's that?
Yeah, I've been asked, what's a payphone?
Oh, it's hard to believe it. You know, that's another thing that you hardly ever see anymore, unless you're like maybe an airport or a hotel.
Yeah, I'm trying to be real. Yeah, and in the hotel, there are more of the ones that have the magnetic stripe reader than the kinds with the, you know, either push button or whatever. Right. I mean, do any of the phone companies still have operators?
Probably somewhere, I'm sure. Maybe the ones for the TDDs or something. You know what I mean? So, I tell you what, I'm getting the battery beeping my ear.
Are you getting beeped at? Okay, Luke. Good talking to you.
Head on, bud.
Hope your Thanksgiving was a good one, friend.
Well, I'm sorry about your all the weekend.
Well, yeah, but hey, good to see. And the response seems to be pretty good as far as Lane Kiffin's concerned. So,
well, it's 6-1, half dozen the other. A bunch of people are starting to ask, you know, was Chavis even offered the job?
Yeah. And, you know, it's a legitimate question.
Yeah. All right, we'll talk
about it. All right, take care, Luke. Bye now.
Bye.
But, Dad, we want a cell phone. We got to have all my friends have cell phones. If all your friends, oh, I am. I'm just the waters of geezerdom are rising over my ankles and they're up past my knees. Well, if all your friends had little packages of plastic explosives, would you want? And you know, they're honest. Like, yes, we would. Because first and foremost, like any religion, consumerism demands that its adherents be christened early and brought often to the shrine. A little bit of geezer, lake geezer just splashed up around my belly. But you probably all remember a time. Well, not those of you of the younger portion. I'm proud of the broad swath of America that we have that listens to the horn. Everything from, you know, teens and preteens, literally, up to the folks who remember the Depression personally. And if we can ever get dialogue going between those things, the learning, that it will just be amazing. But I remember when the only time you could see cartoons on television was Saturday morning. And so all the marketing to children was kind of limited to Saturday morning. And yeah, and there were a lot of, you know, "Oh, I gotta have, you know, look, there's new green meteorites and Lucky Charms." So, you know, Mom had to buy a box of Lucky Charms. But as a parent now, and frankly, it's worse now than it was when our kids were wee, tiny. It's only getting worse. I hope Albert's right and there's some sort of paradigm shift or sea change coming. That it's worse now than it was, and it's a steady onslaught barrage. And it's not just breakfast cereal or little the action figures, as they're called, Barbies and G.I. Joes. And, well, you know, Ken. It's not that anymore. Now it's stuff that costs $3,000 and $4,000 and $5,000 and $6,000 and $100 and $1,000. And parents are beset by their children. You know, I sat down and had the cell phone conversation with the kids. Because, you know, my biggest defense of, you know, I want a cell phone is, what are you going to do with it? Call people? Who are you going to call? My friends. And your friends all have cell phones? Uh-huh. And they have unlimited minutes? What? Well, yeah, okay, see, you don't know that. But it has a heck of a lot more to do with having the damn thing than it does with using them. And that's part of the kids, this is a tool lecture. This is not a toy. But it's, you know, I want a cell phone, I want a laptop. And they don't reserve this just for Christmas. This goes, you know, parents today are beset by this 365 days a year. You know, kids' advertising used to be limited to things like Barbie and Ken and G.I. Joe and breakfast cereal, because those were all purchases that adults made for children. Gone is the day. Children have... The geniuses in the marketing and advertising industry have figured out that children now have disposable income, which even I, you know, little Mr. Born in 1963, kind of go, what?
Back when I was a boy,
if you had disposable income, it was because you had a paper route. But that's not this America. This is an America that stomps its fellow human beings to death for a cheap TV or whatever, you know, whatever else was on sale. And damned if that's not a tragedy. That kind of consumerism, you see, is as big a threat to the structural or infrastructural or spiritual or philosophical or actual financial integrity of this country as anything that some 6-foot-6-inch Arab with a portable dialysis machine living in a cave in Pakistan could ever dream of doing to us. And the goriest, sickest part of it all is that it isn't some 6-foot-6-inch guy playing with explosives in a cave in Pakistan. It's our so-called fellow Americans. Which leads me to believe that we had better damned well figure things out pretty darn quick and figure out who the real enemy is. Are. Because while we're watching what's going on with the birdie in one hand, the other one is picking our damn pockets. And it really is just that simple. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
May I ask you a question?
You can do anything you want. It's a regular joint.
Followed by a phrase.
Sure.
It's important. It really is. What is the greatest word that your father ever taught you?
Oh, that's kind of tough on the fly, Bob. What do you think it was?
Followed by a phrase. No, we cannot afford
it. There, yeah.
That is the greatest word. No, we cannot afford it. It's a fact of nature, Bob. We, the people, cannot afford any more of this. I want, I need, I gotta have, oh, give me some Nikes or what was that? Your children want cell phones.
I know, yeah. And that's a, you know what, that's a failure on our part that they do, but.
No, Bob, the perfect word to teach them is No, we cannot afford it. It's not in the budget. We do not need it. You don't need it, and therefore you cannot have it, period. That's the end of the sentence. No. It's the greatest word in the English language. Is it not?
Where that's concerned, it is. Because, you know, one of the, as Depression era people, the thing, one of the things that my parents despised most was debt.
Yes. No. That's enough. It's the end of sentence. No. That's it. It's just no. It isn't. Go on, keep crying, asking for more, begging, crying like these banks and these auto companies. No. We don't need you. We don't want you. We have no use for you. Get out of the goddamn kitchen. If you can't cook something that tastes good, like a, what'd you call that early in the show? Some of that sweet apple pie? No. Oh, sweet potato pie.
Sweet potato pies, yeah, sure.
Yeah, you was baking them up. I was baking up a pumpkin pie. Is that
the same? I bet it was darn tasty, too. It's pretty nearly the same critter, really. By the time everything, you know, the pumpkin or the sweet potato just holds the flavor. It's just a placeholder.
I know that. I've had sweet potato and I've had pumpkin pie, but I have to say to this nation, to this world, no, we can't afford any more. It's enough of this radical consumerism or whatever you want to call it. It's just, we do not need it. We can't afford it. No. No more. Nada. You're out of the picture. Just forget it.
Yeah, and that the thing is, Bob, here we do use that phrase.
Ah.
In fact, we use that phrase more than we use yes.
Good.
And we use it for things that cause Agnes and I to sit up, you know, looking at each other going, you know, what the hell's going on here, on more nights than I care to talk about.
Good.
You know, because it's daddy, I would like, you know, daddy, I'd like to have dance lessons. No, we can't afford it. You know, daddy, I want to go to camp. No, we can't afford it. No, we can't, because we, I don't guess it was genetic, but I have the same loathing of debt that my parents had. You know, I can't number the times that on Sunday afternoon when my dad wasn't at work, we'd go toddling around while dad listened to the Braves, or, you know, on one of the, you know, when the days were really good, he'd get a Reds broadcast on a Sunday afternoon, driving around the new subdivisions outside my hometown. And he and mother would stop and look longingly at the new homes going up.
Yep.
And then the rationalization would start.
Yep.
Kenneth, look at the lot that house is on. Our lot's twice as big as that. How can somebody live that close to his neighbors and not go crazy? Oh, I agree, Margaret, I agree.
Yep.
But sure enough, another Sunday and we'd be out there looking. And they came close a couple of times. And I was all for moving to one of the new neighborhoods. But at the end, in the final analysis, Dad and Mom would sit there and look at each other, Bob, and they'd say, you know what? We own this place.
Yep. And that's it. Now, let's get back to reality. Come on. We have had a human being trampled to death in a Walmart. Where was that Walmart? Was it in Midwest, or was it?
No, Valley Stream, New York. Valley Stream, New York. Just right near Queens.
There you go. It was a place where people have been displaced, and they've displaced their values of human nature, and they don't care about their neighbors unless somebody blows up a building or drops a couple of towers on them. Then everybody has to think about New York City, right? We have to worry about New York City Bob. It's not that important. It's, yes, a hub of commerce. It's that place where the United Nations is, and everybody has to think about New York.
And it, right, and it's every bit as important as Op Alabama, or the 96 South Carolina, or any of those places that Sarah Palin called the real America.
But what
the media have done, Bob, is to make us think that New York is this glittering alley of the giant diamond sparkling towers filled with wealthy people. A hell of a lot more working folk in New York than there are the hummingbird tongue canapé eating crowd.
I know that, Bob, and you know it, but there are a whole lot more homeless people, too. People that live in the subways and eke out a living just on the streets of New York, but they don't speak of those. They're like non-people, Bob. They're like, what did the Germans call them? Untermenschen or something like that?
Yeah, Untermenschen, sure.
Yeah. Something less than human, and that's the way they speak of the homeless in New York and in Baltimore and God, all up and down the East Coast. And they speak of your people and my people too. Those West Virginians, what do they call you, people from West Virginia?
Hillbillies?
Hillbillies, yeah. You just some of them stump liquor bunch, right?
Yeah. That's
everybody
right.
Down there is same. See, that's the way they speak of each other, but they don't speak of us, the United States of America, as the United States. No, they think of Michigan or Wisconsin. And
well, and that's a reversal of what happened after the Civil War, because one of the things that you also never hear the United States referred to anymore as was the word that Lincoln used most, the Union.
The Union, yeah. The Union.
A joining together of parts that is greater than the sum of the same.
Sum of the whole, yeah, that's it.
You can't, but you can't say, except for the fact of State of the Union, that's about the only time you'll ever hear that word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
and I give it, I give it another 10 years before that thing turns into the State of the Homeland.
State of the Homeland. Oh my God! Don't say that. What did Adolf Hitler call it? Huh? Der Vaterland or something like that, and Russia was. The motherland, okay?
Yeah.
And now we have the homeland. Come on, Bob.
I know.
We live on the planet Earth. It is limited in space. And it's a small little blue marble. And it's not even a marble in of the universe. We're just a grain of sand. And on that grain of sand are all these little I don't know what you want to call us, beings. If we're beings, we're not human in our actions nor in our language.
Well, interesting you should mention that, Bob. I was doing an interview that was being conducted by email, and I was working on it last night, as a matter of fact. And I'll tell everybody when it comes out. It's a cool little website that's on the way. Not one of ours. I'll tell people. But anyway, there were some, sort of trick questions at the end. Opine on one or any of these if you wish. So, me being me, I took them all on. But one was, the last one was, is there a God?
Yeah.
Then,
I go for the giant spaghetti monster myself.
Well, for the most part, I do too. Because I just love the idea of the afterlife being a beer volcano and a stripper factory.
There you go. Anyway,
I said, if you want to get serious about it, I said in the final analysis, I guess I treat the universe as God.
Mm.
Because, a hair growing on the back of your head can't see out of your eyes.
That's true.
And that's the but yet it is no less a part of the body than the eyes themselves are.
Unless you drop it at a crime scene, then it's evidence.
but anyway, so I said, you know, I'm humbled. I'm humbled when I consider the universe. And because, you know, it's breathing. It's expanding. It's contracting. It's contracting. It's expanding. It's breathing! Because it's alive! And I said, you know, when I tend to think of myself as a cell on an armpit hair of the universe. And if I'm feeling really froggy, I'll think maybe I'm a cell on a taste bud.
I thought maybe the best thing, that we could do for our children, yours, mine, all of your children, is just to teach them that the greatest word in any language is no. No more, no más.
Oh, yeah, and if you take, absolutely, Bob, if you take that word and you apply it, you cross over and apply it to, say, your civic responsibilities, learning to go to the ballot box and say no.
Say no. Just
Or to talk straight up to your elected representatives and say, your support of, oh, let's pick one, Bob, torture, your support of torture is unacceptable, and to you I say no.
No, absolutely not. And I have to salute all those that stand by that principle, Bob. It is the greatest word that we've ever been taught, and if we use it prodigiously, I mean prodigiously, when they say, okay, let's do this, you just say no. It's enough. We got to stop it somewhere. No means no. It doesn't mean if you keep whining and asking for another $25 billion, we're going to give it to you. No. And if the Congress says no, and the Senate says yes, and the President goes along with the Senate, the American people should say no. I'm not paying my taxes. I'm just not going to do it. No. I'm not going to give you the money. Because that's all you really want, Bob, is for us to keep giving in. When they say, we're going to sell you a $2,000 TV set, or whatever you call it, some kind of a big thing you stick on your wall, 55 inches.
Yeah, altar. The word is altar.
Altar, yeah. You want me to go in there and spend my money to buy your altar so you can sell me some more junk? No, I don't want it. I don't need it. No.
Yeah, right, and there's that word, no, because you've taken me to another place, Bob, and that is remembering that what I thought was kind of anachronistic, cranky behavior on my father's part. When he'd buy a new car, and they bring it out, you know how they bring it out of the garage. They've done all the prep, and it's all shiny and purdy.
Yep.
And he'd say, that thing on the back there that says where I bought it, take that off, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why? And you know, being asked why when he just spent all that money, no. It should be yes, sir, and go do it. Well, why? Because you haven't paid me to advertise your car lot.
Right.
And so, you know, the same thing happened, you know, the 50-inch TV, you know, 700, 800. What you just said is absolutely perfect. To buy the thing to hang on the wall for them to use to get us to buy more things.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, for the vast majority of television broadcasting, not entirely, but the vast majority of it, is all for-profit driven.
And they're trying to sell you. And that's what they did. They sold those poor souls an idea that they would have something better than what they had if they would just stampede into that store and kill that poor man, and they sold them that idea. And they are guilty, just like you said at the beginning of the story, of the show, that the store owners and the corporate bosses and those that keep telling you have to do this to feel good are the ones that are guilty of causing the death of the man that was trampled to death by his peers.
And honest to God, Can you imagine? Is there any other thing that you would spend your hard earned money on, Bob? That you would put power to in the morning that comes on and tells you, "Hey, good morning. You suck. Buy this, and you won't suck anymore. You'll quit being miserable if you've got another one of these."
I get up every morning miserable, but that's just me. Okay, because I live.
So so many other people do too. And yet,
well, you know, but if you've got the $800 television, well, you know, you're gonna quit being miserable.
That's what my kids told me when I bought that damn computer to hook me up to the internet, which finally got me hooked up to Bob Kincaid. I don't think about it that way, but that is it. You're driven by these powers outside. Not too many years ago, Bob, I bought this thing called a computer, okay? Because my children said, "Dad, you got to get one of these things." And then after I got the damn thing, they said, "You got to get on the internet." And I spent tens of thousands of dollars to hook this thing up and get it fixed up so I could get on the internet, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and now I've got this satellite uplink thingy, and I got this big computer thingy sitting over in the corner, which I didn't want in the first place, but my children, they convinced me I should get involved with this thing, and so I
Okay, so maybe sometimes no isn't such a – maybe there are times when no is not the right word. Because I'm awful glad you succumbed to that that pleading.
I did that because I love my children, right?
Yeah.
And I got involved with this this internet-y thingy, and now – when I first got it, it was fast. Oh, my God, that thing was fast. You could ping across the globe, and you could get back in a few milliseconds, and, boy, you got the fastest internet there is, right? Now they're telling me that in order to get the faster internet, I got to buy a whole new system, and it's different than the one I got now because this one is archaic. That was just 10 years ago, Bob.
God, in computer terms, 10 years old is 1,000. You know how 1 year is 1 year, 7 years in dog years? Yeah, it is.
It is not good enough because I told them this time, if this thing goes down, I'm out. I'm done with this. I'm done with the computer. I'll go back to, you know, paper and sending things and licking stamps. I guess you don't have to lick them anymore, but I'll send my bills in like I used to do back in the good old days.
You know what, Bob? You remind me of a line from a book by Tom Robbins called Still Life with a Woodpecker. And part of the plot of that book is he's typing the book on a brand new, and this is before computers, brand new whiz-bang Remington SL3 typewriter. And he said, you know, this electronic baby types almost before I can think. And he goes and you go through the whole book and there are little interludes of his interactions with this hot new typewriter. And you get to the end and he says, if I ever write another book, because he killed the typewriter at the end of the book. If I ever write another book, I'm going to do it with a sharp stick and a little pile of dog shit.
There you go.
And I understand that completely. The only problem is, as far as, you know, what we're doing here and what so many and what a number of other people are doing, the for-profit only crowd, well, they own all the radio stations. So I, much to my frustration, I can't turn on an over-the-air radio and hear Mike Malloy or Tom Hartman or Stephanie Miller. Or Randy Rhodes.
Do it on the internet. I do the same thing, but I do Mike Malloy and Randy Rhodes, Tom Hartman, and Bob Kincaid. But I have to get you, and I have to get you because I need that sane thinking voice, that bit of sanity in this world of insanity. I cannot watch TV and listen to terrestrial radio anymore because it is saturated with so much propaganda.
Buy gold now.
And the sadness is that we did not say no soon enough. voted for Dukakis, believe it or not.
Hey, same here.
And I believe that, you know, hey, just because he didn't look or fit well in a tank, it didn't matter because he wasn't no cowboy.
The first election I was able to vote in was 1984, presidential-wise, and I voted for Mondale. 88, Dukakis. 92, Clinton. 96, Clinton. 2000, Gore. 2004, Kerry. And now, Obama.
Now you're talking my voting record, too. You know? But I wasn't born to be a fool, Bob, nor are you. And your beloved father taught you well. He taught you to think for yourself.
And yet the beauty out of all that, Bob, is I can't tell you the number of times that he has looked me square in the eye and said, "Did I teach you anything?"
Yeah, he did. You know he did. Because he said no more times than he said yes. And you know he did.
And that made the yeses all the sweeter.
Yeah, but when he said yes, it was because it was earned and it was something of value. Something that would linger. And you remember those sweet little moments. Like I remember this.
I hang on to them for dear life, Bob. Honest to God,
and
I do.
It's part of your being, and you'll take that with you. And I will take a piece of you with me. And that is that we care, Bob. We care about this planet. We care about the people that dwell on it. We will do our very best to the very end to give back what we have learned, and that is that there are times when the best word that you can give to any person on this planet is no. That's enough. The end of the sentence, no. It doesn't have, like, okay, if you just keep begging, we'll give you more. Now, and I know I am all for the union, the unionization of workers. I am all for labor and the unionization of labor and the union itself, the union of this nation. I am all for it, but we have to get past Stites rot. Okay?
Oh, yeah. Stites
rot. The right of the state over others. You know, if my state, North Dakota, decided to secede from the Union, it would be the third largest nuclear power on the planet.
Now, I hadn't thought about that. That's damn true.
It is a fact. If the United States and Russia, okay, the two largest nuclear powers on this planet, had the secession of North Dakota, North Dakota would be the third largest nuclear power on the planet. But, Bob, we are part of a union, the Union of the United States. Now, let us put away all foolish toys. I, for one, as one North Dakota native, would wish that we put away those toys, that stupidity, that wish to have more power over our neighbor by having a bigger TV set. What is that, a 50-inch Parabellum, wait a minute, that's a 9mm.
Yeah, it ain't parabolic either.
Yeah. TV set hanging on. Well, I can whoop out and, you know, kind of point in your face. Say, look, I got a bigger TV than you do. Yeah? It's that point that we have to come to as human beings and say, what I got hanging on my cable is pictures. You know? I look up on my cable here, and I see generations. I see Ma and me in the middle there with that same picture.
I know what you're going at, Bob, and it's the daggum truth, because you know what, going through the Depression, going through the Second World War, and even before that, when my grandfather, my great grandfather, were busting their ass to form a union so they could be actually paid in American money, among other things. They didn't do that so some poor guy could get stomped to death for a television set.
There you go.
I mean, build the time machine and go back and you know, to the days of, say, radio, when not many people had them. You know, the big old wooden boxes, the beautiful pieces of Art Deco furniture that was a radio, tubes and all that stuff in the back.
Oh, my God, that was...
They're exquisite pieces. And build that time machine and ask anybody that has one or doesn't have one, would you stomp a human being to death
to get one
of those?
And they'd say,
well, hell no, are you crazy?
You out of your mind? I'll just go down here to, you know, hey, down here to...
I'll save till I can afford one.
Yep, I'll work hard. I'll save my dimes and nickels until I got enough to where I can buy one. And if I can get some electricity into the house to plug it into. Because... Bob, that was back before they had the...
That's before the Rural Electrification Act. That's in the day of the Delco battery.
Way, way back before they had them, that Tennessee Valley Authority.
Sure thing, sure thing. I got the stories from Mom about, you know, electricity running on Delco batteries and having to haul the batteries in, trade them in, get another battery. Sure thing.
And then there were so many people that, you know, they had... generators out on the farm that they generated their own electricity.
Hey, you know, you live in a place that was dotted with windmills once.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. And they're starting to dot it again, Bob. They are putting in wind farms up here. Yeah,
we just can't have any here in West Virginia, you know. But, Bob, I got to roll along, brother. Thank you for all the good thoughts. That's beautiful stuff.
To all my friends on this planet, no is a beautiful word, and it means no. It doesn't mean just keep begging car companies, just keep begging big bankers. We'll give you all you want. No. No more. We don't need you. We didn't need you when we used to, you know, kind of barter. I mean, I could give you a chicken or a couple of chickens and some eggs and, you know, and maybe you got some sweet cream or, you know,
butter.
But we used to work together as a union. People in communities work together to keep things working. And they work together because that's how they survived. And that's what we'll have to do again soon. We will have to either work together or fall apart. And I don't want to fall away from you, Bob. I want to gather this nation, this world together. I want to see it become what it really should be, a union of people that care about each other, the Indians and the Pakistanis, and forget the borders, forget the nationality. I want the Afghans and the Iranians and the Iraqis, and everyone. I want us all to forget that ethnicity, that
I know
he ain't quite the same color as I am. I want them to forget that for one moment and think, guess what? We have just one chance. This may be it. Bob, Obama was not my first selection, you know it, and I know he wasn't yours, but he is ours now. And either you either get behind him or you don't. I don't know if he's going to be a good president or a great president or just another George Bush in the offing, okay? I don't know.
I don't think, I'll say one thing with certainty, Bob. I agree with most of what you just said. I don't know if he's going to be a good one or a great one.
Mm-hmm.
But the standard that we have established for being a terrible one, in the last 8 years. I don't think that Barack Obama could bash his own noggin against a brick wall, smoke up a bunch of crack,
no,
honk on some meth, smoke three bricks of Lebanese hash,
yeah,
jack himself up with a world of heroin, and drink three quarts of rot gut and get to where George Bush is.
Let's do this. Let's not really beat the hell out of him before he starts.
Nope, you know? I'm right with you on that.
Let him get out of the starting blocks, and then we'll start judging. Let us not judge what he picks to be his cabinet, nor for his...
I got to tell you, you know, no, I'm not judging, but I do have a duty, I think, and, you know, I kind of define what the duty is based on what you guys have...
Yes.
I have a duty to let you know who these people are.
I know.
If you don't already. I mean, this guy that was the old coal whore, who's going to be National Security Advisor.
Jim Jones, that's a name that will live in infamy.
Yeah, yeah.
James Jones was a former Commandant of the United States Marine Corps, and I will give him this, okay? He may have been a shill for the coal company, but now he's working for a new man, and I believe that...
To his credit, Bob, he turned down U.S. Central Command.
Yeah.
And he turned down Chairman of the Joint Chiefs when Peter Pace got it.
Okay, but
and you know what he said about that when he did? He said, "I don't want to be the parrot on the Secretary of Defense's shoulder."
There you go.
But so I respect that.
I do too, but I got to say this, okay? He will follow orders, and he will do his duty. But I believe this. He is not right of center. He may be down the center. He may not be left of center. I wish he were left of center.
Kind of hard to expect a retired general to ever be left of center, though, isn't it?
I know that. But the thing is...
But I got to be honest with you, Bob. He scares the dickens out of me. Because he thinks sending 20,000 or 30 or however many more thousand men and women under arms to Afghanistan is a good thing.
I know that, Bob. It's the same. But, Bob, let us look to the leader and not to those that he has selected to do his bidding. And maybe they will do a better job than they've done in the past. For the past 8 years, we've had no leader. At least we've got a leader. Maybe he's not our first choice. He's not our best choice, but he is the best that we had to choose from this time out. And, Bob, let's just hold on for a moment, because he hasn't even taken office yet, and see what happens. If it goes bad, hey, it's going to be less bad than it would be if we had the other guy.
That's my hope, Bob.
Me too. And I'm with you, my good friend, Bob Kincaid. I am with you. My heart, my soul is in your room, right beside you. I hear your voice. I believe your words. I know it because it comes out of my heart. I feel the same way. I'm afraid too, but I'm not as afraid as I was yesterday or the day before, because I have a little bit of hope, just a little bit, and maybe if we hang in there just a little bit longer, it might work out. And then again, it might all, like Mike Malloy says, we'll just hit that damn brick wall, and it'll go kersplat, and that's the end of civilization, period. If we hit that brick wall...
Congratulations, cockroaches. It's your turn now.
That's it. So either we pull ourselves out of this mess by just the skin of our teeth, because it wasn't a Democrat that took us here, Bob. It was not a Democratic administration. We haven't had a Democratic administration since John Fitzgerald Kennedy. We have not had a liberal administration since that time. They killed him back when I was a boy, and he was the liberal. And he said, if by a liberal you mean someone that cares about the schooling, the teaching, the learning, and the homes of the people, then I am proud to be a liberal. That's what he said. And they killed him, Bob. They killed him. And the best hope we had after him was a peanut farmer from where down there in Georgia. Jimmy Carter was a true liberal. And he said, we have an energy crisis. He said that back in the 1970s?
What, 77 or so?
Yeah.
Bob, I'm going to roll on, brother, but you're absolutely right. You are on so many points. Absolutely right.
I love you. But sometimes I disagree with that idea. I'm not giving up just yet because of Obama's picks. I'm not giving up.
Nor am I.
I might cuss him or discuss him.
I'm discussing
with you.
When I consider the slack that was given to George W. Bush, this guy at least gets pre-inaugural slack.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
All right. Take care, Bob.
I love you, folks. I love you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And let's see, who we got here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
Hey, Ed, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I just thought I'd call in. I got a couple comments on that reflects the trampling of the guy at Walmart. And, you know, that typifies the general public anymore. I mean, if you don't think so, you got people, you can't even go to a non-crowded store like Kroger's or somewhere, and you got some idiot running over your heels with a buggy instead of waiting till you can get moved, or they move the boxes and stuff in the way. They run right up on your heels. I've absolutely had my heels skinned by the rudeness of people, inconsiderate people. And look at the highway, how they do. Do you think that they care for 1 minute whether they cause you to wreck or not, as long as they can get around you and cut you off? That's typical of what society is like in this country now.
Oh, I know. I saw an article last night, Ed. It was from some Chicago publication advising Chicagoans in a hurry not to try to zip around the presidential motorcade. That the Secret Service doesn't cotton to that nor take too kindly. And that there's a reason the last car and the first car have all their windows down.
Mm-hmm.
It's so the sniper can get a clear shot.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be reminded. Oh, look at me! I'm stuck in traffic here behind the president elect. I'm going to pass him.
Yeah.
No. But by the same token, I am not willing, Ed, to put as much of the blame on that mob in New York as I am to the people who made that mob, who built that mob from the ground up. Now, just as a sort of a for instance, I ran over to the website of one of the leading right-wing family Christian values organizations, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to go through a few of their headlines here, if you don't mind. Not going to comment, just tell you what the headlines are. How to vote against a Democrat supermajority. Obama keeping promises made to homosexuals. Anger expressed over eHarmony decision. Activists backing anti-marriage judges. Will GOP ditch its core values? Another medical breakthrough with adult stem cells. Texas schools push to censor scientific discussion. West Virginians rally for traditional marriage. The best and worst of TV advertisers. Russia touts itself as anti-American world power. Will homosexuals silence America's Christians? Christian organization bringing awareness to AIDS plight. Violence erupts in Jos, Nigeria. Recent poll results. Under God, pastor dead at 97. Gospel witness upheld in round one. Open season on human embryos around the corner. Planned Parenthood condemned for lethal gift certificates. Obama pick for healthy secretary prompts pro-life concerns. Divorce case challenges Oklahoma marriage law. Oprah under fire for adult-themed program. Now, the reason I read all that, Ed, is not for what's there. There's three or four shows worth of stupid right-wing idiocy there. It's not for what's there, but for what's not there, Ed.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'll swear to you, I read every headline on that page. Did you hear mention of one story of the stomping to death of one of God's children in a stampede at Walmart?
Nope.
No.
And
they're
not going to publicize that because it's a reflection of Walmart or business or commerce or
all the things
the
that
capitalist
these
way.
Yeah, all these things that these phony Christians claim actually support. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, a year ago this time, you would see you'd see headlines on this very same website about how they're not saying Merry Christmas enough. Well, Walmart's just all kinds of saying Merry Christmas now, but people are getting stomped to death in their stores.
Yeah. Well, Christmas, I remember when I was a boy, there wasn't anything like toys. You got a pair of bibbed overalls and a shirt, and your mother made some fudge candy and put walnuts you gathered out of the woods in it, and that was basically Christmas for us.
I'd crawl across ground glass for some of that fudge with them walnuts in it, I promise you.
Yeah, but I've been, I don't know if you call it thinking or reacting to the way the Republicans and these so-called liberal, more liberal stations like CNN and these stations, they get these daggone Republicans on there. Bob, what in the hell has Republicans got to do with Obama and who he picks?
Not a blessed thing.
It's any of their damn business.
Not a blessed thing.
I
was going to say, don't kid yourself, Ed. There ain't nothing liberal about CNN.
About what?
About CNN or headline news
well,
or any of the. There's no such thing as a liberal media. That's something that was made up by the right wing.
Well, they're more so than what Fox is. And it's more so than what Steve O'Brien is. But the thing of it is they get these Republicans on there. If they got so much coaching to do and they knew what Obama should do, maybe why didn't they coach George Bush into what to do? And that idiot still, he was going to try to change some more stuff, and he let the time limit catch him. That's how stupid he is. But
even George is getting around to a little confession. You know, confession's good for the soul, Ed. And he said, I think the reason John McCain lost is America rejected Republicans, and they rejected Republicans because of me. I recently went to Africa, and I was so pleased to see people waving at me with all five fingers.
Yeah, I remember that. I got a thing posted on my refrigerator said the biggest problem with, you know what? I forgot how to say it. I'm going to have to go read it to you.
That's fine.
I got so much stuff on there. I got even the seconds. I got a little computer-like thing.
Mm-hmm.
How many days, how many hours, how many seconds. But listen to this. More and more of our imports come from overseas. Isn't that fantastic?
You know, that's why I said if Obama did all of those things, got all liquored up and fell down and hit his head and got all stupid, he still could not get to where George W. Bush lives.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I look back at just so much stuff that he did. I was just sitting at the table playing solitaire the other day and letting the bad mistakes and the stupid blunders he's made and still in office. America no more.
You know, that's what should be written on Nancy Pelosi's headstone when the time comes. Here lies Nancy Pelosi. Let George Bush get away with murder. Refused to impeach.
Well, and Harry Reid ain't no better. He's a little gizzard lip.
Well, you know, there ought to be permanent. There ought to be just permanent tire marks in the dirt over wherever Harry Reid goes. That's a reflection of how he let himself be run over.
Mm-hmm.
By a bunch of knuckle walking, mouth breathing right wing freaks.
Well, you know, if I lost, I'd still stand my damn ground. I guess they'd have to break me off from at the ankle to get me to move, because I'm planted in concrete up to the ankles on what I believe and what is the right thing. But it just tears me up to see these programs. Let these Republicans get on there and come back with their views and turn and twist things around when they ain't got a damn thing in it. And the thing that bothers me about Obama is he puts he's in bed with the enemy. Now, you may not agree with him, but you don't buddy up. You know, I told you the thing about the snake, you remember?
Yep.
Well, that's how I feel about Obama. You knew he was a damn snake when you picked him up. So if you get bit, why, don't blame nobody but yourself. But in fact, you got some Democrats in that category that, in my book, that he's got too many close ties with. But the man's supposed to be smart, so I don't have any choice but give him credit and hope that he knows what he's doing. But
that chance is there. Not that Barack Obama's, you know, sitting around every evening going, oh, damn, sure hope Bob Kincaid keeps on having a little faith. He ain't. But like I said, all I've got is a little bit of integrity and a little bit of independence. And in light of that fact, Ed, I'm damn sure not going to give that away.
Well, you don't give it up, but they may take it. I mean, your independence may go because of the economy. And
no, but Ed, I got people that support this network who don't have the wherewithal to do it. And I worry about it all the time, Ed. Every time somebody does contribute to this network, and Lord knows we go down, and this does not happen without them doing it. This network does not happen without the listeners contributing and supporting and keeping it going and just, you know, allowing us to keep our bills paid. This network doesn't happen without them, but I got people that are giving things up to keep this going. And so I have an obligation. I have a solemn duty as I see it. Not to march lockstep with anybody, but to just call it as I see it.
Well, you got an obligation to yourself too, because you got to look in the mirror every morning. And that's the way I feel about it. When I lay down at night, I have to pray, but it ain't over giving up my right to think and believe and say what's right and the things that I'm against. And the very things like George Bush said, we honor those that have sacrificed and went in harm's way. And everything he says is the opposite of what him and Dick Cheney has done. And that is so repulsive to me. You know, you talk about a despicable, you know, he's right there with old Joe Lieberman and the bunch like that. And we got them right here in Charleston, Bob. This state is sold out. And I don't know who to. But,
I do.
But coal probably and
sure.
Gas.
Sure, coal. Coal, oil, gas, timber.
Mm-hmm. And maybe when they turn this place into a dang desert and plains by leveling off the mountains, maybe the people will wake up when they can't even grow a garden for the topsoil blowing away. Maybe they'll wake up. But I won't be here to see it. But, Bob, people don't have insight. They don't have foresight. And it's not a good thing to look at for your grandbabies. And you can't run. It's everywhere.
No.
Our country is bought, like somebody said, we got the best politicians money can buy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So, and these guys.
But you know, the question is though, do we just quit and walk away, or do we keep screaming? Do we keep fighting? Do we keep demanding?
Screaming ain't enough. Until somebody gets enough nerve to the unions, and that's the only organized thing except churches, and they sure ain't gonna do it. They ain't fit to be called a church, but until the unions get together and call a general strike, like way back in the old days, we're not going to change. Until they change, it's just like on a smaller scale, when you strike a company and they feel it in the pocketbook, they're not going to change. And neither is this government. And when the guy said that we'll give them a dollar on the hour raise, but we'll not let them have control of Washington, they meant it. And that's what it's going to take when the tax structure breaks down to where they ain't got nothing to operate off of and pay their own salaries. They'll set up and take notice to us then. But people has got their big televisions to pay for and their big fine cars, and they got their vacations already planned for July. So, and they're not going to give that up. The ones that don't give it up to help the other people go through a period of doing that, even if it's for 2 weeks, they'll understand what that means. And until we do that, we can scream as long as we're hollering, because it's like the Navy said, if the troops ain't bitching, they ain't happy. Well, we're bitching, and we ain't happy.
Yeah.
But it ain't going to change until, you know, I don't think it will. And the one thing it is we have got going for, we've got our Mountaintop Removal Organization has got their attention anyway in this state.
We're making real progress, Ed. We are.
Yeah, I know it. I know you are.
And you know, I'm surprised. You know, I'm as proud as I can be, to know the progress that we are making. Well, I hope you had a good Thanksgiving, Ed. You and Dreamin' and the grandkids. Did anybody do anything?
Yeah, they. I was glad to get when the company was over. One of them come in from Georgia. He's in that one of them schools down there, college, and we had company like that, but. Nothing like we used to have, but it was good holidays. Did you have a pretty good one?
Yeah, it was nice. Yeah, just family stuff, and we literally didn't leave the house on Friday because I even before I heard of the tragedy, we'd already had a little chat about the fact that, you know, no, we're not going to participate in this madness.
Yeah, well, we don't, when we won't. Because I can't stand to stand back and watch the rudeness and the inconsideration of the slobs that we got out there pulling that stuff. And another thing, I don't want to get whipped for starting a fight. so I just didn't go participate in it. Because the first one had done me like that, or shoved, or played the role of an idiot.
I went out and did Bridge Day for obvious reasons this past October. There were 200,000 people on two lanes of a four-lane, one-mile-long bridge. Now, you want to talk about a crowd? I'm used to dealing with crowds. I mean, I know how to elbow my way through one if I got to. But, you know, I had my kids there with me, and they'd never been in it, and it was scaring them to death. And I said, just take a deep breath. We'll get through it. We'll be fine. But it was terrifying, because if one person had said boo, there wasn't but 876 feet of thin air between us and the next piece of solid ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't gone to it, and I'm not going to it. It ain't nothing but a bunch of, it reminds me of a circus. You know, you got all these imports along the way there. Of course, you got some hot dogs there. It's made here. But we had to go through there to get to the golf course to Summersville one time, and it took us an hour. They had one lane of it open, one side, and it took us an hour to get across that. And I think that's the most ridiculous thing. We are the only bunch of stupid hillbillies that'll open up a bridge to jump off of. I am ashamed for West Virginia, and in many ways. One is the vote that's done, and one is Bridge Day. Bridge Day is the biggest joke Chamber of Commerce promoted that ever, and you know how I feel about the Chamber of Commerce. As far as I'm concerned, they're public enemy number one.
That's part of what gives me so much pause when I realize that Obama's new national security advisor is a former policy advisor for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah. Well, I just hope.
A little bit unsettling, isn't it?
Huh?
A little bit unsettling, isn't it?
I scratch my head and can't figure out, you know, of course he's a thousand times smarter than I am, but I can't figure out his reasoning on putting these kind of people in there. Like I said, it's like the guy that picked up a snake and brought him in the house and thawed him out and got bit by him.
You knew I was a snake when you picked me up. Yep.
That's right.
Hey, Ed, I got to roll on. We're fresh out of time, my friend, but we will talk soon.
Okay, Bob.
All right. Take care.
My call.
Oh, it's always a joy, and give our best to Dreamer.
And you, same goes over there.
All right. Thanks. Bye now.
Bye.
Wow, it was a heck of a darn fine Monday we had going there, wasn't it? And by the way, I'm sorry I wasn't in the chat room. I wasn't being a snob, but we got DNS problems here, and a bunch of pages aren't loading quite right. So, you know, I'll be there when I can, hopefully by tomorrow at the very least. Well, no, program note, no show tomorrow. We've got a rather important meeting coming up as far as the mountaintop removal opposition here locally. So with your indulgence, I'm going to participate in that. But I'll be back Wednesday for prayer meeting. So, again, thank you, everyone. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. I hope maybe we worked through some of the many myriad feelings that attends all of the horror that has just been poured out all over the world for the last 4 to 5 days. I hope that we have. And, look, I hope you understand how serious and sincere I am when I say I worry. I worry about you when you contribute to the Horn, because I'm kind of between the devil and the deep blue sea on this. We can't do it without you, but I'm damned if I want to see anybody going without. And I say that because things are getting grimmer and grimmer and grimmer and grimmer, and I don't know if we make it past January. I just don't. I just don't. So, thank you for tuning in. And know how much we think of all of you. And know how much we respect the hard work and the ideas and the input of everyone who participates in whatever way you do. And always, 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 RMR. Gina, it's all for you.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome back to reality. By now, even the turkey carcass soup should have been consumed. Hope you all had a very nice Thanksgiving. Hope you all gave some consideration to the other side of the Thanksgiving debate. Because there are people on this continent, many of them, who justifiably so mark Thanksgiving as a day of grief, of fasting, and of remembrance of a civilization. Civilizations erased, blotted out, rubbed out, wiped out by Europeans. Certainly passes my mind. But it has been a long weekend. It has been, when stories break and I'm away from the microphone, I was this close. Damn, if only we were doing video. I was this close to just coming in here and cranking stuff up and doing a show regardless of whether anybody was listening. Because